It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Well, boy, we had a great week at Mobile World Congress. Miriam Joire is back from Barcelona. She'll give us a look at all the new phones. And I think the biggest story, the HTC Vive. Ian Thompson's also here from The Register. Oh, Doctor, we'll talk about tomorrow's big announcement, the Apple Watch, and a whole lot more. All the tech news next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 500, recorded March 8th, 2015. The Puppy's Package. This Week in Tech is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TWiT. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you get award-winning financial tools, unbiased advice, and a transparent view of all your investments. And best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to PersonalCapital.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to Squarespace.com, enter the offer code TWIT at checkout to get 10% off. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique quality, classically crafted eyewear, including sunglasses, at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus free 3-day shipping, go to WarbyParker.com/TWIT. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, a show where we cover the week's tech news. Great panel here, starting with Miriam Joire. Just got off the plane from Barcelona. Tank Girl was in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress.
Madness.
And you must be exhausted. Did you get to sleep a little bit?
No, I'm not exhausted. Well, I slept for one thing. It's just a really long day. And I slept before I went to the plane. I slept on the plane. You know, now I'm really happy to be here. It's way more entertaining than watching movies.
Good. Welcome back.
Yay.
Nice to have you. Also here from The Register, Ian Thompson. It's great to have you, Ian. Welcome back.
Many thanks, Liam. Good to be back.
We discovered that Ian lives nearby. I thought you lived in England. What did I know?
No, I've been out here nearly 7 years now. Haven't said, I'm still saying gas now rather than petrol, but other than that, still solid.
What kind of accent do you have? Is there a characterization for your accent?
Probably Posh RP, because I went to a boarding school.
Posh RP. I thought it was kind of posh. It sounded a little Sloan Ranger-y.
You take that back.
I wasn't sure.
Do I look like I wear red trousers?
Anyway, great to have you, Ian. Also, from parts unknown, from a Dropbox somewhere in Pennsylvania, Owen J.J. Stone. Hello, Owen. Oh, he's muted. Did you mute your beads?
Muted.
Oh, there we go. Speak to me.
What'd you say?
Oh, doctor!
I miss you, Uncle Leo. Episode 500.
How can I miss you if you won't go away?
This is the point. I'm trying to get on TWiT. I'm like a little mini Leo. I have 87 shows. I'm going to talk about things. I'm going to get a ham radio and an old camera and an iPad. And I'm going to register minitwit.com.
But you know what you need? You need baseball suspenders.
Oh,
pitchers
see?
And catchers are reporting on my braces.
I need those.
Nice, huh?
Especially for people of my younger age, hold up their britches.
Keep
the britches up.
Nice to hold up the britches. So people are noting this is episode 500 of this little program. We've been doing this for quite some time. And wondering, well, why aren't you doing something like, where's the cake? We are, but the reason we're not doing it today is because next month is the 10th anniversary of the very first TWiT. So April 19th, that's when we're going to do all the celebrating. I figured 500, 10th anniversary, let's do 10th anniversary. So 10 years we've been doing this show. The first TWiT was April 17th, 2005, and all of the original cast members are coming back for that. So it'll be John C. Dvorak, it'll be Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, David Prager. The only person I think who hasn't committed, Roger Chang.
Roger Chang's a maybe. He just had a baby. So
he's a maybe because he had a baby.
Exactly.
So that's...
I just saw him in Barcelona.
Yeah, you know, Roger's holding out. I think he's holding out for more money.
You got to send that special gift, Uncle Leo. You got to send that little baby rattle, you know, to entice him out.
Mm-hmm. Some Cheerios.
There you go.
So anyway, that's why this is a special show, but this is why we're not doing a big party or anything. And also the director's chairs didn't come, and the crown is missing. So as soon as we have to wait for everything to arrive. So I guess we should start. Tomorrow is the Apple Watch event or something, spring forward. We'll certainly talk about that, but I think we should probably start with what happened because, frankly, we don't know much about what's happening tomorrow, but we do know what's happened in the past, and that's Mobile World Congress, and it just happens. Miriam Joar is just back from Barcelona. First of all, was it fun?
It's always a fun show. It's a busy show. It's harder than CES in many ways because you have to jump around the whole city for a lot of the press venues. Just like CES, you have the actual show days, which are not really that big of a deal for the media. And then you have the days before the show when all the press conferences happen, like the Galaxy S6 launch, the HTC M9 launch on Sunday, March 1st. That's the stuff you have to run around the whole city for. And you know, that's not the only two that happened that day. So it's a great show. It's really crazy. I had a really good time, as always. A lot of really exciting announcements this year.
Actually, Ian, you used to go. You didn't go this year.
No, I haven't been now since 2008, since I came over here. But I was going back to it when it was still through GSM in Cannes. So it's changed an awful lot.
I remember those days.
Oh, yeah. Gladly forgotten.
It feels to me now like this is, in many ways, more important than CES, certainly as mobile computing becomes more important. And no, really, there weren't many cell phone announcements in January in Vegas. Everybody said, well, we'll wait till March.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you actually announce it makes sense to do that because there's so many news announcements coming out in CES, and Mobile World Congress is the mobile show.
Yeah.
So it's a bear pit out there. I have to say, much respect to you for doing it. You must be exhausted.
Is the show floor as big as CES?
Probably, I don't know. It's probably about as big. It's hard to tell because it's a different venue, right? Now they've moved it to this new space that is gigantic. It's bigger than the Las Vegas Convention Center, oh, wow. It seems. But it probably isn't because the Las Vegas Convention Center is one of the biggest in the world. It's big. And you know what was interesting this year is this is the first time in many, many years that we've had that many launches of phones and devices at Mobile World Congress. The trend in the past few years had been for at least Samsung and HTC and a few of the mainstream players like LG to launch their phones at their own press events separately and ahead of time or after Mobile World Congress. Think Galaxy S5, think HTC One M8 last year. They did not launch at Mobile World Congress. So this is the kind of a return to form. The GS2 was the last major phone that was launched at Mobile World Congress.
I didn't realize that.
And the M7... Actually, let me think. The M7 or the 1X, I can't remember. But not. It's been a while since the big players have launched anything major at Mobile Congress.
And I guess if you're big enough, like Samsung, that you can have your own events and the press will come, Apple is a good example. You don't really need to be in all the noise of something like Mobile World Congress. It's convenient for us, though.
It's very convenient. It's also a bit of a buyer's show as well. You know, just as with CES, if you've got a buyer's tag on, everyone wants to speak to you. And right. If you've got a press tag on, nobody wants to speak to you. I mean, Mobile World Congress seems to be moving towards that being a buyer's show, but there's still a lot of decent tech out there. I mean, Samsung's launch seemed to go fairly well.
Yeah, a huge improvement over previous Samsung events.
It's the biggest launch that I've ever seen. It was massive. I have never seen a press launch like that. The demo room was literally thousands of people.
Wow.
Media people. They had a separate demo room for partners, which are the carriers and people. I have never seen anything like it. It was the biggest launch of all of the history of launches that I've ever attended.
And thank you, Miriam, because we used your footage from that demo room last week on Twitter. We also used your footage of the M9 from their press conference.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to get you more stuff. But
that's plenty. Those are the two phones I cared the most about.
I think these were the big ones. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this because I've had some people tweeting at me saying, why aren't you covering this for Twit? Where's your coverage? I didn't go for Twit. I went for Mobile Geek because I'm a freelance tech reporter, tech journalist. So my gig was with Mobile Geeks, and, you know, I know you sent Mike there, and he got some really great coverage for you guys, too.
If you go to our special feeds, we have three Full day coverage of day one, day two, day three on the twit.tv/specials. And, of course, on our news shows, Mike was, you know, right there Skyping in and stuff. So, yeah, we had a lot of coverage. But I really appreciate what you did for us, too. That was really great.
Oh, no problem. I just do a lot of these hands-on videos. I can just wing them and put them together real fast. I told Jason that I figured the timing would be perfect, right? You had your show coming up, and it was later that day, basically.
Right, yeah.
So I was like, if I get this stuff and I put it in a Dropbox, and you know, the press room is really fast internet, so I could upload that in like 10 minutes, which is exactly what I did, and all it went very well.
So I actually don't think the big item there was a phone, but we're going to talk about that. I think the HTC Vive might be more interesting, but let's talk about the phones before we...
I got to try it out, so I can...
Yeah, I want to get your impressions, but the S6 looks pretty good. I was impressed that Samsung kind of got off of its tone-deaf presentations. They didn't have the Broadway show.
It was
terrible.
Painful to watch.
And it was also less sexist. Actually, three of the four presenters were women, or two of the three presenters were women. It looked a little bit more professional all around. And I think the phone looks better than any phone they've ever done. It's got a glass back and front.
It looks more solid. You know, I'm sure it feels better, too, in your hand.
I love that edge.
I had an S5,
It is the most beautiful Android phone I've handled yet.
Better than the M8.
Better than the M8, but the M9 is the M9 itself. The new one is better than the M8,
okay.
And so it's a toss in terms of feel in hand. It's a toss between the M9 and the 6 Edge in particular. But I would say that in terms of like detail and design, I think the M9 still wins. But what to me brings the S6, the Galaxy S6 and the Galaxy S6 Edge kind of on top in a way is all the other things that they got right this year. They seem to have just completely nailed this phone in this incredible way, which we all know Samsung can do if they apply themselves. And now that they have the heat, you know, the fire under their butts, they actually are doing it. And it's incredible to see what
they need to, because the S5 was kind of a flop.
It was a turd. I've been calling the S3.
Okay. No, another way to put it.
I've been very, very public calling the S3, S4, and S5 a turd. The S2 was the last great flagship device from Samsung, counting. And of all this, the Note 4 is by far the best one.
I'm carrying a Note 4. After going back and forth for a while with all the different new flagship phones, including the Nexus 6, I ended up going back to the Note 4. Owen, why did you get rid of your S? You said you had it for a week, the S5.
One, somebody needed a phone, and I buy stuff like that just to test it out.
Aww.
So I was like, look, I'm not going to use it. I took it in the pool for like 2 days when I was with my kid, and I thought that was the coolest part of the phone.
Because it was waterproof. Don't take the new one in the phone.
No, well, and that's the thing. The way it felt cheap, and that's the thing I didn't like about it. Like, I felt like I was going to personally break it at some point. And then once you, with the water feature, I feel like you take that back off a couple times, getting to the SD card and doing things, that seal's going to wear out on you, and then you're beat. So this new phone looks amazing, though. It looks small, though. I don't know whose hand that was. That was
Miriam's hand. Yeah.
I have big hands.
She has ladylike hands. It does look a little small. It's only 5.1 inches. That's for nowadays. Yeah. That's small.
Yeah, and that's funny to me. Like, it's like, okay.
I like. What do you think, Miriam? Edge or not?
Absolutely. For me, it's Edge, but I think it's very divisive. A lot of people, like, it's very polarizing. A lot of people much prefer the regular Galaxy S6, and some much prefer the Edge. I think personally, I think the Edge feels better in hand. It has a bit more of that kind of sharp edge, like the Note 4 edge that was terrible, was really sharp. This is very nice in hand. I think the Galaxy S6, for me, what I don't like it about it is that it feels really premium, right? Because all metal and glass, but it doesn't look that much different than the Galaxy S5. You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of looks boring. It looks, in
the
fact,
S5 like the was iPhone uninspiring.
Looks very boring, right?
Yeah.
And so the iPhone 6 looks boring, even though it's beautifully made. The GS6 looks boring, and I guess Samsung's going for that kind of like inoffensive look. But with the Edge, they literally, pardon the pun, they really have kind of an Edge device. It it is edgy. It feels and looks like they're really pushing the design envelope in a really significant way. And it is a complete gimmick, don't get me wrong. But there is one thing about it that's great. And it's that you know, a lot of Android apps that you swipe from this like this, you know, from both sides, like the Google Plus app is a good example. And that feels so incredible with that curved screen. It's like a marriage in heaven. Like, it's like, wow, perfect. Now I get why they've done the Edge.
Do you think Samsung, so the Note 4, or the Note is on a fall release. They announced this Note 4 at IFA in September. So presumably they'll do it this fall for Note 5. Do you think the Note 5 will continue to have a removable back, removable battery, SD card? Or are they...
I have a feeling that that's... They're going to kind of handle the Note as a pro device and the GS, the S series as a kind of like a design centric and flagship phone. And as such, I totally understand their choices of removing the like nixing the removable battery and SD card slot. Look, the iPhone doesn't have removable battery and SD card slot.
That's why I carry a Note 4. Just because the iPhone, that's exactly why I don't carry an iPhone.
We're not the kind of audience that this phone is going after, right? Like, I have a Note 4 and I love it too, right? But I think that you have to understand where they're coming from. They're got their lunch eaten by Apple and others this year, and they're literally going straight for that market.
With they may even be somewhat gig, 64 desperate.
Gig, sorry, 32 gig, 64, and 128 gig devices, you know?
Right.
But after you saw the sales of Apple, you know they're desperate for that market.
Right.
The iPhone just blew everything out of water, so they need something to get in the market. My biggest problem, when you just said the space in the phone that's dedicated with no SD card, I can't trust how much bloatware they're going to put on these phones. Because
are they backing off on TouchWiz?
They put so much stuff on these phones.
Yeah, I mean, this Note 4 doesn't have a lot of TouchWiz on it. It's got a little TouchWiz on it.
So it still has TouchWiz, and it's still a pain in the ass.
Inevitable.
They've bundled a bunch of Microsoft apps, which is really interesting.
Not a bunch, but just Skype, OneNote, and OneDrive. Just three. The rumor was they were going to do a lot more than that.
Yeah, none of that matters, though. We still haven't talked about what really makes these two phones absolutely incredibly awesome and blow away the M9 to smithereens.
The fingerprint.
That's cool because that's like Apple. You don't have to swipe anymore. That's nice. It's the display and the camera in particular. Yeah. That display is unbelievable. If you see that display in person, you will like think you had brand new eyes installed. It's unreal. And then, you know, just because they hadn't had enough fun yet with one of the best displays ever made, Quad HD 5.1, the highest DPI of any display. Well, let's curve it.
Right.
Like, they didn't go 1080p for the Edge version. They went Quad HD. They curved that display. That is unbelievable to me. Technically, like, this is like their way of saying, I'm dropping the mic. We've made the best display ever in the history of smartphones.
I want to see SK Chin drop the phone and walk off the stage.
I want to see it. Yeah.
Actually, don't drop that phone, because I have a feeling with glass on the front, the back, and the side, that thing is just waiting to get broken. I mean, really, you're going to.
The first thing they're going to tell you is it's new super ultra.
Yeah, it's Gorilla Glass 4.
Bulletproof,
one better.
Dynamite, everything proof.
How is that? I am kind of convinced with fingerprint reading. I am really convinced that that's important. I work so nicely on the iPhone.
I think it's dangerous. Well, if you look at the court rulings on this, if you get pulled over by the police, they can force you to use your fingerprint to unlock the phone, but they can't force you to give up a passcode.
Password is something in your head.
Whereas a fingerprint is physical evidence.
So this is the same thing as they can require DNA. They can't take a hair from you. Courts have ruled that that's not self-incriminating testimony.
Nope, it's a fingerprint. It's on your finger. Therefore, they can take it.
But the courts have ruled that something in your head, you are protected against self-incrimination, so they can't force you to reveal that. Although, if you're going into Canada, apparently you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you're pulled over by the border police within 100 miles of the border, which covers about 2/3 of the U.S. population, so you've got a 100-mile limit between you and the border where the border police can force you to unlock your gear.
See, that's something, and that just happened in Canada. There's a case going on right now. And apparently, your privacy protections are different if you're crossing a border.
You don't have any.
You have none. So they required somebody to unlock his phone. He said, what are you talking about? That's private. And he's actually he's going to go to jail, I think, because of that. So that's something to be very aware of. But I don't think that's going to keep me away from it. I mean, I'm not so paranoid that I'm not going to get a fingerprint reader because the cops could make me do it.
Well, I mean, as someone who travels across borders a fair bit, I always carry clean gear whenever I go. Right. Whenever I
just
go,
just don't
over the
bring.
Border.
Good, yeah, that's right.
But I mean, fingerprints they're great for convenience, but I just worry about the legal side of it.
I feel like they're more secure. So when I'm using this to unlock my phone instead of a passcode, I feel like that's more secure. It's biometric. If it's well implemented, it's going to be safer.
If it's done well, I do. The problem I have with the Nexus gesture opening is that it leaves finger grease on the phone. Yeah. So if you hand your phone over to a cop,
Dvorak's always doing
that. Scrub it on your shirt just to make sure you've got nothing there.
Miriam, did you try the new touch fingerprint reader in the?
I didn't get a chance to try, but from people I've talked to who've tried it, it's basically like just like the iPhone. It's instantaneous and it just works.
See, that works so well that. That makes that's a big significant difference between this and the iPhone and the Note 4, for instance, where you have to swipe just like you did on old Lenovo laptops and ThinkPads and stuff. That's kind of you got to do it just right. Yes, ONJJ Stone. Oh, Doc.
Yeah, let me just tell you something about this. Yes, long story short, you haven't watched enough spy movies, okay? If I want your password, you have to stay alive if it's in your head. Otherwise, I cut your hands off and I take your password in the morning. If they want to put it on a retinal scan,
again, I'm not that worried. I'm much more worried that my kids will unlock the phone than the FBI will.
Depending on what somebody's got on their phone, I'm not going to say myself in particular, but I'd just rather have you keep me alive so you get into my phone as opposed to cutting off my thumb and getting into my phone.
I'm not Liam freaking Neeson. I don't expect somebody to say, okay.
I don't know who you are.
Secure. Special
secure is in here. This is secure.
Oh,
this
come on.
Is not so secure. Anybody can get this.
Okay.
Hard to get up in this thing.
Okay. All right. Meanwhile, I'm going to use fingerprint when I pay for my potato chips at Whole Foods. I'm sorry. That seems good like to me.
So there's a couple of things that we should talk about. We should definitely talk about the camera because that camera is, if you think
the demo was impressive, but I never trust a demo. They had side by side low light comparisons, both stills and video.
It's unbelievable. And you know why? Because f over 1.9. That's why. That's the only reason. It is the fastest lens on any flagship today.
There's plenty of f2 lenses.
Yeah, but that's quite a bit different. If you've ever used f1.9 versus f2, you'll know the difference. It's and about you're getting an extra like doubling in light. It's unbelievable. It just makes such a difference. And then on top of that, you've got OIS 16 megapixel and one of the fastest camera apps. Like it starts in 0.7 of a second. You can double tap the home key for it to start and it's instantaneous. Like you tap the shutter button, you get a picture. It doesn't matter what you do. It's like they're
that
really going after Apple.
It's huge. Because there's a lot of phones, including quite a few Android phones, where you touch the button and you wait.
Yeah.
It has manual controls as an option. It has tracking focus now, so you can tap on an object. And if the object moves like a car person, it'll continue tracking it like live in the viewfinder.
That's cool.
So, I mean, it's really, they've really gone crazy. I'm not a huge fan of Samsung usually, but I have to say, the camera on the M9 is a huge disappointment. No OIS, 20 megapixels with really small pixels that are really noisy. So far hasn't impressed anyone, even though the rest of the phone is gorgeous and wonderful. It's like Samsung's just really nailed it this year. They've done everything right, except the not waterproof, no removable battery, and no micro SD. But that's a small compromise, in my opinion, compared to all the things they nailed. And I think this phone is going to sell like hotcakes. And I actually think, I mean, it's not going to dethrone Apple, no way. But it's certainly going to give Apple a bit of a run for its money.
Isn't
once
it close,
it
though?
Popular.
I mean, isn't it? I know Apple's dominant, but isn't Android close? And isn't Samsung kind of close within 10 points of Apple in terms of adoption in the U.S.?
I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but it's pretty close.
The Android
close,
market is flooded with other opportunities, too. That's the one thing that dilutes that whole conversation. But one thing about the camera, every time a new phone comes out, I hear about how great this camera is, and I read all the statistical things about how much better these cameras are than an iPhone. And everybody I know that does phone camera shooting, they all use iPhones. And if you see anybody without one, some people buy an iPhone just to use it for their camera for that kind of stuff.
That's because people are
and
cheap.
Use a Samsung.
That's because people are sheep.
I'm telling you, people usually just use their camera. The quality is better.
No one disagrees that there are better camera phones out there. The Nokia 1020. I think the 1520, arguably, and certainly the
I'm talking about for mass production. Like,
yeah, because people are sheeple.
The S5 was supposed to be a better camera, and it did all that fancy stuff.
Yeah, I didn't like the S5.
It could take 40 pictures.
But I like the Note 4. I really,
every
I think
time
the
I
Note
hear
4
stuff,
is very
I
good.
I got to get it in my hand and see it. Yeah. I'm sure Note 4 is great for you.
But Owen, I'm someone who became a blogger because of camera phones, okay? So I actually started writing my own blog because I was absolutely fascinated by the concept of a phone being able to take pictures. And I've used every major camera phone since 2005. And I'm telling you, there's one thing that the GS5 didn't have, and that many of the competing phones right now that are supposedly good, but I don't end up being good, don't have. And that's OIS and a fast lens. That is a killer combo right there. And the Note 4 is an example of that. The iPhone 6 Plus is an example of that. And we're gonna get that out of the S6 and S6 Edge. They're going to be incredible shooters, and you will see.
I'm going to buy one on your word just to try it.
Yeah, you better. And then give it to me, okay? Because you always give them away a week later, right?
I do always give them away.
There's several other shooters out there that are really, really quite good because of the combination of a fast lens and OIS, you know, and some of the Lumias and some of the LG phones, actually. But they're crippled. The Lumias are crippled by delay, by like...
Denim fixes that. I put Denim on my 1520 and they eliminated the delay.
Yeah, Denim is a lot better. Yeah. But on the LGs, the problem is the software is crap.
Yeah.
So like the
how about the Sony? Isn't the Xperia supposed to be amazing with laser focus?
They're not. Because the LGs are the one with laser autofocus.
Oh yeah.
That works really well.
Okay.
The Sony's are all missing OIS, which is incredible because they make the sensor in the Note 4.
I know. Sony makes the sensors for everybody.
So I don't get it. I mean,
Have you seen?
Don't get me wrong.
I'll tell you, Apple knows how important this is. If you go to apple.com right now, front and center, this new gallery of iPhone 6 photos, and they're stunning. They're stunning. Now, yeah. And most of these are coming from social networks. Apple spotted them and added them. And they're just, I mean, I've never seen these are DSLR quality. Now, some of these guys are pro photographers, and it shows you the eye is important, but this is iPhone 6.
The iPhone still has an edge over the GS6 and the Note 4, and that's it. The fact that they refuse to go more than 8 megapixels,
right?
That gives you large pixels that are even cleaner and less noise. And then here's where Apple blows everyone away. It doesn't matter how good Samsung's GS6 phone is going to be, the software. Apple has the best camera app and camera software. So you combine that with a fast lens and OIS, and now you have a really killer combo. I use an iPhone 6 Plus right now, and the pictures I'm taking with it blow my mind. They're really incredible. And I'm a person who can take good pictures almost any phone. And it's like they make it so easy and seamless. It's amazing. But I do think that the GS6, like the Note 4, is going to impress a lot of people in terms of imaging, and it certainly sets the bar.
One thing Andy Inako pointed out is that if you know what your capabilities are, you notice all of these are in fairly bright daylight, for instance.
Yeah.
If you know what your capabilities are, you can maximize. That one's not. That's the Eiffel Tower at night. But there's a lot of light there. You can maximize the capabilities by maximize the quality of the picture by knowing what your phone's good at and staying away from the stuff, maybe low light, for instance, that your phone's not so good at. And that's clearly here. But I have to say, these are amazing. We're going to take a break. We won't know till April 10th when this S6 comes out. And then we'll all get one. And then we can fight then. And I want to see your pictures, Miriam. And if you show me yours, I'll show you mine. Not you, O-Doctor.
I know, not me.
He's wearing a Flyers shirt, ladies and gentlemen. Is that a personal favorite of yours? Or is it just any Philadelphia team you love?
I have to rep Philadelphia in general. I'm not a hockey fan, so I just got this because I like jerseys. So if I ever go to a hockey game, it'll be a Flyers game first.
Yeah. You haven't even been to a hockey game?
No, my friend's supposed to take me, but I've been busy, and it's been snowstormy. So I'm trying to go to a Rangers-Flyers
game. Your mistake. You should go to a fight. I went to a fight once, and a hockey game broke out. It was an old joke. Bad joke. Taking a break. Come back with more. Miriam Jouar is here. formerly of Engadget fame, now just wandering around looking for work. Is that fair? She's gone.
Well, we're
now she's wandering working around looking on connectivity. For a Skype connection. Yes, yeah, we're working on that. Miriam's Skype connection. We will get that better. Also from the Register, register.co.uk, the fabulous Ian Thompson. Always great to have you here.
Oh, it's very nice to be described as fabulous. Thank you.
Fabulous. You know, Dame Edna is retiring. There might be a place for you.
I always look lousy in makeup. It just doesn't work for me, you know?
And Owen J.J. Stone, he is O-Doctor. And no one knows what he does. It's something about
fresh
web design.
Fresh as can be.
Fresh. He's fresh. Is that Febreze? You're spraying yourself with Febreze?
Gotta stay fresh, Uncle Leo.
Not recommended. Or is it Windex, like my Greek wedding, my big fat Greek wedding?
It's Febreze.
It's Febreze. Okay, just checking. Our show today brought to you by Fresh. How did you know? Fresh Books.
I know everything, Uncle Leo.
Can you smell the freshness at freshbooks.com/twit? FreshBooks is a great solution for anybody who's a freelancer, a small business. If you're sending out invoices, you know that is painful come the end of the month. I used to hate that on the 30th. In fact, I've told this before. Forgive me for repeating myself, but I got to the point where I just put it off till the next month and the next month. I literally submitted 5 invoices to Rogers at once, and their accountant said, She was mad. Nice, though, that's when Amber told me about FreshBooks, freshbooks.com/twit. It lets you make beautiful, professional-looking invoices and update them and send them out almost automatically. In fact, they do have an automatic invoicing feature. You can, if you do time and hours, use their smartphone apps on Android or iOS to automatically record and input them into the invoice. You can use the same apps to keep receipts. Take pictures of receipts, add your time and expenses. It's so great. Travel and expenses is so great. I am a big fan. One of the very first kind of modern websites I ever used, and they've just gotten better and better and better. Billing clients has never been easier. And if you ever need help, great support right from their office, and support is free forever. So I want you to try it. It is built for growing businesses. In fact, on average, FreshBooks customers double their revenue in the first 24 months and get paid an average of 5 days faster. It's because they make it easy for your clients to pay you. If you have a slow pay client, that happens. FreshBooks has automated reminders that make it easy. You don't have to make that awkward phone call. It is just great. CNET says FreshBooks has a refreshingly straightforward approach. I agree with that. It's very clean, very straightforward, very easy, and yet very powerful. Well, I want you to try it free with no obligation. 30-day free trial. Freshbooks.com/twit. And all I ask, if they ask you, where'd you hear about us, just put This Week in Tech. Freshbooks.com/twit. So we called Miriam back on Google Hangouts now. Is that what we're going to use? We're going to see how that works?
Yeah, we'll
Skype
try.
Was failing
is
us.
Is it better?
It's the picture's not as good, but that doesn't matter. I want the audio to be good.
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, the you guys coming in are pretty bad too. Your image.
We
on
don't
my
care.
End come,
I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
You know what I look like. It's not getting any worse. So I thought the okay. So we mentioned the S6. Before we get to the HTC VR helmet, was there anything else that got underreported in Barcelona, Miriam? Is there anything you thought was really interesting?
The bunch of interesting Android Wear watches, the LG Urbane and Urbane LTE watches were pretty hot. And then there is the Huawei's Android Wear watch. All of these were kind of premium-looking metal watches with gold and silver-like finishes. Pretty high-end, pretty nice. The thing about the Huawei one was that it's got a display that is round but doesn't have the flat tire of the Moto 360 and has very little bezel, which I thought was awesome. Finally, somebody's cracked that nut, so that's cool. But the LG ones, you know, they look really great. They're kind of like an LG Watch R, G Watch R on steroids in terms of the design and the quality of the materials and the build. And then there's an LTE version that doesn't run Android Wear because Android Wear doesn't support LTE, doesn't support being an independent, self-connected device, as it were. And that one runs a variation of webOS. It's very much the same watch that we saw Audi show at CES. So it's interesting that the Urbane LT is an evolution of the Audi Watch from CES, like a further advancement on that, and with WebOS and LTE, and still pairs with your phone for notifications, but it can run standalone and take phone calls and all that. And then the Urbane non-LTE is an Android Wear device that's very similar to the G Watch R, but much more premium. So these will come out very soon, and I'm probably going to get my hands on some because I got good connections with LG, as you know.
I love my Motorola 360, but I have to think that tomorrow, anybody who got their watch out in the last couple of weeks just like went, we made it. Oh, because tomorrow the world changes, just as the world changed when the iPod was. You think that's hype?
Honestly,
just trying to make it up to people I called cheap earlier.
We are honestly not going to know, because what Apple will give us tomorrow is the basic tech specs, and all the journalists who've had it for 2 weeks beforehand to try it out will post reviews about how wonderful Apple is, because they're going to lose access to the company.
Right. Walt Mosberg will love it.
I'm not going to use the word whore, but it's just...
the best watch Apple's ever made. We'll hear that.
Oh, come on. Apple's
ever made.
Now you're getting nitpicky. The best watch we've ever made.
The only watch we've
the
ever made.
The thinnest watch.
Which makes it.
We've ever
it's
made.
It's not the thinnest watch. It's a little fat porker. I wish it was
No, but it's still the thinnest watch they've ever... It looks like a little gold pillow on your wrist.
Yes, it is. From a fat person, it's a chubby thing. And I'm used to my little sleek, sexy Apple devices, and now I got to go deal with this fat thing on my wrist.
But if they didn't start fat, then next year they couldn't say it's the thinnest watch ever made.
We've reduced the size by 42.4%. Now you can actually lift your arm to look at the thing.
Yeah. I didn't want to get off on the watch thing, we will. We'll talk about the Apple Watch. I want to finish Mobile World Congress. I'm on record saying I like augmented reality. I'm excited about HoloLens.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm less excited about virtual reality, which has been getting all the press because of Oculus Rift. But HTC announced something they call the Very Immersive Visual Experience, V-I-V-E, Vive.
Mm-hmm.
And Vlad Savov of The Verge says, I wore the Vive and didn't want to take it off. You wore it. What do you think?
It's unbelievable. It is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. This
better
is to
than
me
the Oculus?
It's the highlight of the show. It's incredible to me that it's HTC and Valve. Not Valve, but HTC more.
No, but Valve is involved, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. But I'm saying it's HTC release. It's HTC's product with Valve's technology.
Yeah.
So it's impressive to me that HTC, the underdog, just came out with something that literally blew every journalist's mind.
A market they're not they've never been in.
Exactly. And I think this just shows that they're thinking forward, because they know that they can't. I don't think they'll ever get back in the lead in smartphones. They'll stay relevant for a while, but it's going to be a challenge for them. So this is their way of saying, look, we're thinking beyond smartphones. You know, they also did a wearable called the
Rig. Look at this.
You're carrying that amount of junk on your face? Seriously.
I believe Valve is involved in this, because this looks like that creepy thing that would get onto your face in Half-Life.
So wait, guys, you have to understand, first of all, this is not this is a developer product, and it's not meant to be worn when you walk around outside. This is a VR helmet. You wear it when you're inside in your house.
And
it connects to a PC. So this is the thing people don't understand. This is not a standalone device. This is a PC-connected peripheral. It will have a couple of wireless controls that go along with it. And
like joysticks or like Nintendo nunchucks or something?
Yeah, they look very similar to that. And it's up in the air whether the final product will be wireless or not in terms of the VR part. But... Let's put it this way. I've tried Oculus, and I've tried Gear VR, and I've tried a bunch of different products. And, you know, they were kind of wow, but not like, I want to stay in this universe and I want to experience
I don't
more
know.
Of this.
This rhetoric sounds exactly like the rhetoric we heard when people first tried the Oculus Rift. Oh, my God.
Well, I'm telling you this. This was unbelievably good. First of all, nobody got sick. I've talked to every single one, women, men, everyone. Nobody got sick.
Okay, that's a big deal because I get sick with the Oculus.
Of demo, And the reason for that is because instead of having a single display, they have separate displays for the left and right, super high res. They're 1200 by 1080 each, and they refresh at 90 hertz.
That's wow. That's the key point.
And that makes a big difference.
When you look at a white surface inside the VR universe, you do not see any flicker. Also, the motion sensing is so accurate that you have no lag whatsoever. So when I was using the two controllers and I was touching them together in the virtual world, I could actually feel them touch in the physical world exactly the way I saw them in the virtual world. So the accuracy of the positional system they're using, which is laser-based, is really, really good, which is another reason why you don't get sick. So they've really done their homework, and you know you can tell Valve has worked on this for a long time. So you're going to say, why Valve and HTC? Well, it's very simple. HTC and Valve got together to do this starting in the summer, and they now already have basically a developer unit. And that's because HTC is a Taiwanese company. They can design and manufacture products very quickly because they have that expertise. And conversely, Valve has a ton of expertise in creating virtual worlds, on, of course, in video games, and a way to monetize and distribute these through Steam. So this is a huge deal. I think, remember, I'm an ex-video game developer. I worked in video games for 15 years. I actually got interviewed by Valve a few years back. I didn't take the gig because they're a bunch of crazy workaholics, but I love them dearly. But the point is that I think this is significant. I think this is significant because it's the first thing that everybody unanimously agrees. There's no ifs or buts. This is really good. And two, it's a really kind of marriage made in heaven. These two companies are 5 minutes apart, their headquarters. So it's like, it just seems like a great fit. And for HTC, it's a great way to move forward. And Valve needed a vehicle, you know, after they've been working on this stuff forever. And they couldn't scale. They couldn't manufacture this stuff.
So they say it's going to be in stores by Christmas.
Yeah, they want to launch it by the end of 2015.
It's just for gaming, right?
Yeah, and you have to understand.
Or is it watching movies? Am I going to watch movies on this?
No, I don't think it's worth it. You could, but it's not interactive. The thing about this that's unique is that it's really designed to be used you're going to have to make space in your house to use it. Ideally, you need a room that's 15 by 15 feet. No, seriously. This is I don't think it's going to be a mass-produced thing. I think it's going to be a niche product for a while. But the reason for it is that you know the games are optimized so that you can walk. And as you get too close to the real wall of your
space, seems like a really bad idea.
It kind of fades in this grid in front of you that shows you how far you can go without hitting something.
All right.
And it's really, really well done because I never, ever single time hit anything. And it kind of fades in and out really seamlessly. But like, look, you know, I was not impressed with Oculus Rift ever. Okay? So take it with a grain of salt if you want, but this blew my mind. This was so good. I was like, wow, I've seen the future. This is it.
What?
So this is going to be the best Minecraft experience ever.
No, HoloLens is going to be there.
Yeah.
HoloLens is made by Microsoft, and Microsoft's going to make
Half-Life 3.
It's for immersive gaming, and that's the difference. So Minecraft is far from immersive, even if you like.
I'm just saying, you want to sit there and build blocks? Hey, I built my block.
But that HoloLens will be. I think people who played with the HoloLens in Minecraft were very impressed.
I used the HoloLens, and I gave an embarrassing interview on this channel about it literally 5 minutes after I'd used it.
Because you were excited.
I was literally blown away. The stuff they got on the Curiosity cameras on Mars was the puppy's packet.
The Mars stuff is the what?
It's
the dog's puppy's packet?
It's a nice way of saying the dog's bollocks, but yes.
Is that a good thing?
Oh, yeah. Bollocks
okay,
is
just
bad.
Checking.
Dog's bollocks is good.
Okay.
Don't even ask me why.
I have so much to learn. I completely lost track of what... It strikes me that AR is good for user interface, and VR is good for immersive gaming experiences. The world, they can coexist.
Some immersive gaming, because with VR, and Miriam, you pointed to this, with VR, moving around is a problem. So the kind of games... I was at GDC this week. The kind of games that they really want to get this into are ones where you're sitting in a spaceship like Elite or where you're sitting in a racing car. If you're doing a first-person shooter, then
it's not so good because you want to run.
Exactly.
So actually, boom! This is what's interesting about Vive is that the idea is that they want you to be moving. They want you to be on your feet and have this 15 by 15
that's a recipe
space
for disaster.
That the game guides you through that. Doesn't let you, you know, basically it shows you where the limits of your real physical world are so you don't run into things. But they don't want you to be sitting down as much
gonna,
as what we've seen
who's
with
VR dedicate
so far.
A 15 by 15 room, because you have to dedicate it because there can't be any furniture or coffee tables or anything in this room. It has to be an empty.
Microsoft has a problem with the, they have
that's
to put
not
that
my
soap
problem.
On their thing.
This is a marketing question. There's going to be some crazy
it's
hardcore
it's
games.
It's a question. Real world question.
Yeah.
How much is it going to be? Did they say?
No, nobody knows. I figured probably, you know, it needs a high-end PC to run. So you need a PC. Add to that probably another 1,000 or two for the gear. I don't know.
They already have one game developer, Valve, involved. So presumably Valve will develop Half-Life 4.
But Valve
or
is
something.
Like their partner. It's not that they're just involved.
Yeah, yeah, no, I understand. The but what I'm saying is there will be games that use it because Valve will make sure of that.
Of course it is, yeah. Well, that's how I said Half-Life 3, guys. I mean, think
was
about it.
Was Vive at the GDC?
No, they didn't have they'd shipped them all over to Barcelona, which was really annoying.
No, they did not. That's not
really?
True. They had a whole bunch of Vives at GDC. I wasn't there, but I
they
know
were hiding
my
them from me in that case. That
they said, "Oh, Ian thinks it's the dog's bollocks. We don't until we can figure out if that's good or bad."
That's interesting. No,
in fact,
I went round there
fact,
and asked,
guys,
and they were saying
all
no.
All the demos at Mobile Congress were labeled GDC demo. So they were actually showing it at GDC far more than at Mobile
World
Congress.
Be very
goody. I'm on that blacklist.
It'd be very it'd be very telling if they showed it at Mobile World Congress and not at the Game Developer Conference.
Well, you'd. I mean, this is why we went around the stand, but we weren't seeing anything there. But I mean, I'm with you. It does appear to be much better than the Oculus in terms of the kind of the experience that it gives, and so much better than Samsung's version of this, which is just. Blocky as all hell.
Samsung's version is just basically a Note 4 in a thing.
Yeah, well, Google
it's kind
gave
of
you
like
a cardboard,
Google cardboard
for that.
Yeah. So we could throw that out. That's not really in the mix. We're talking about, you know, kind of interactive, real-time, immersive gaming. And it is Oculus. It's funny because Facebook spent a lot of money on Oculus Rift, and they've been scooped by HTC, of all people.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about Oculus is that their technology can scale, right? So all they have to do is improve the resolution of their display,
right.
Refresh rate, and a bit more accuracy on the positioning, and then they're probably going to be able to catch up. But the thing that does make Vive unique is these two controllers as well. Mm. It really does give you the ability to, like, pick up things in the world. The controls are very similar to the Valve controller, the one for the Steam PC. So in the sense that they're like, if you took that and broke it in half, basically, and held both halves, that's basically what you have. Two D-pads where your thumbs are, trigger buttons on the bottom, and you can squeeze the controls as well to make them click. So, it's really well done.
Is the market hardcore gamers?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, right?
And also, you know, they're gonna try to figure out and see, like, how will it get accepted by people? You're right. This is going to be a very niche product. I mean, 15 by 15 foot room. I don't have a room that big in my place. They're all 12 by 12.
Basically, it's Notch, Bruce
they're
Willis,
sell it in beta
and Shaq.
Form and get people to tell the rest of the world how much they love it.
Yeah.
You know, because even by the end of the year, the
Actually,
market's probably
you know,
not even
one
ready
of the
for
things,
that.
One of the things that came up with all the reporters I talked to at Mobile Congress who got the demo, who were all amazed, was how do they market this? Because you have to experience it. So you need to create some sort of studio where people can go and try it out, because then they'll be blown away and buy it, perhaps. But until then, it's kind of like you guys are hearing me say it's amazing, but you don't believe me because you haven't experienced it. Right?
I believe you. By 15 room. I hear 15 by 15 room, and I hear they want me to stand up and move, but don't move. You said one game that got me excited. But then I think, well, are there going to be other games or enough games to justify the price point? Mm. It's not you. I believe that it's awesome. I believe it's probably the best thing you've seen on the market. I believe that. You've sold that part of it. It's just all the other aspects of it as a regular person or people in the market. Like, is it even going to happen?
Could it work with a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One, or does it have to have a PC?
No, right now it's PC only, but it could theoretically. The technology is not limited to a PC.
Because that's where people are spending money, right? Is the hardcore. Well, I guess their PC gamers are the hardest core of hardcore gamers.
Yeah, I was gonna say, nothing
stops Valve from coming out with kind of a Redux, you know,
We're talking thousands of dollars.
To evolve the technology.
We're talking thousands of dollars.
It's
going to
evolve. But the thing is, all of this stuff going on right now around VR, the kind of the rebirth of VR, is eventually somebody will figure out how to make it work and make it a more acceptable thing and a more manageable and marketable thing. But this, what we're seeing happening here with HTC and Valve, needed to happen.
Here's what it is.
The quality wasn't good enough. Now the quality is good enough.
This is the Surface table. This is a big ass. This is something, and you're going to see it in casinos. You're going to see it at Dave and Buster's.
Correct.
You're not going to see it in people's living rooms. This is the Surface table.
In fact, when you first get into the VR world, when you first put the headset on and you plug the headphones into the headset and put the headphones on and hold on to the controller, the first thing you see is the holodeck from Star Trek. Very much the same.
Yeah.
An empty room with lines, and you're like, holy crap, I'm in the holodeck. And then they kind of fade in the world, and it feels so unbelievably real. It's just, that's the thing that blew my mind compared to Oculus.
There's a slight difference, which is the holodeck, you didn't have a face crab on.
Of course not. But that doesn't matter, because
had a face crab. Yeah. No, he had a HoloLens.
Somebody has something.
The VR headset that I tried was a prototype, and it was super lightweight and very comfortable. And within minutes, I didn't even know I had it on.
It does solve the problem, though, if you see it in places like, ESPN Sports Zone, and you play it there. That's how people can get excited about it, saying, "Oh, but if it doesn't yet feel like a home product, but you know what? I want immersive VR, right? Wouldn't that be great? I want to be able to go to Paris and pretend I'm there." And
up to a point, I'm curious, Miriam. In terms of, did you have to have it plugged in for power, or could you actually run this off a battery? Because I think that's going to be key if you are going to move
this
it around.
No, this was all plugged in. This was connected to a PC. There were a bunch of wires, but there was also a prototype. They, as I said early on when we started discussing it, for sure the controls will be wireless.
Mm-hmm.
The big question mark is on the developer release, the headset will not be wireless. It'll be connected by a single cable to your PC. But on the there's talk of the final version, the retail version, to be potentially wireless in terms of the headset as well.
Yeah, you see, this is
how
the problem. HoloLens
do that, I don't know.
HoloLens, the demo that they showed was wired, but didn't they say it was going to be a wireless device?
Well, I mean, during the keynote,
it's a standalone PC in the HoloLens.
Well, that's what they said, but I mean, when you're using the HoloLens kit, you had to carry a battery pack with three pans going nine to the dozen on there. You had to wear the special headset. Now, at the keynotes, they showed this sort of black headset which sat around. They wouldn't let us touch it, but they did have one in a glass case. It has no air sockets on there. So when it comes to cooling, if they're running three processors like they say they are, not going to work.
It turns out your skull is an excellent cooling device. The heat's going to go right in your head.
Oh, that's going to sell well. But, I mean, also battery life. Unless they've got some astonishing power density battery advances, then it's never going to work for more than a couple of minutes.
I would love to see immersive virtual reality. I think it's more for gaming. I think both have a role. I think augmented reality is maybe the future of a user interface. When you're putting on a Vive or an Oculus Rift, you've sealed yourself out from the rest of the world. That's a little bit of an issue. Anyway, let's take a break. Come back with more. Because guess what? Screw all that stuff. I'm buying an Apple Watch tomorrow.
Give me one while you're at it, Uncle.
You want one? All right, I'll trade you. Yep. You give me the S6, I'll get the. I'll give you the Apple Watch.
That sounds like a fair deal, actually. I need that solid gold Apple Watch.
Oh, you want the edition? Oh, aren't we special?
You didn't state which one, Uncle Leo. I'm just saying, you never have to buy me another present for the rest of your life.
I know, really. It's like my daughter. That's what my daughter said. If you give me an Audi for my birthday, you won't have to ever get me another present.
It's a fair deal.
It seems fair on the face of it.
This is why I have cats.
Yeah, don't have children. My God, don't have children.
Yes, cats.
Don't have children. Personal Capital, ladies and gentlemen, gives you amazing award-winning financial tools, unbiased advice, a transparent view of your investments so you can make sure that you have money for retirement. A lot of investors are actually wasting retirement years with high fees and hidden costs using traditional brokers, mutual funds with big loads that you don't even know about. Those costs add up. You could literally have run out of money before you... in your retirement, before you kick. Personal Capital is free. It's secure. I set it up 2 years ago. I love it. It's already helping more than 700,000 investors just like me. identify and eliminate high fees, manage and grow your wealth. It's your money. You want to keep more of it. Look, you just try it right now. Go to personalcapital.com/twit. You can at least use these tools. You can use them for budgeting. You can rebalance your investments. If you wish, you can get unbiased advice too. If you track accounts worth assets worth $100,000 or more on the Personal Capital dashboard, they'll give you a free 30-minute review with their very nice advisors. It's not a pitch. It's not a sell. They'll literally look at your goals, your risk tolerance, your time horizon, and they'll help you craft a retirement plan that works just for you. This is something that's unique to everybody, and getting advice like this is really worth its weight in gold. Costs you nothing at personalcapital.com. Personal Capital gives you total clarity, total transparency to make better investment decisions right away. For a free, no-obligation portfolio consultation, all you have to do is link $100,000, or more in assets on the Personal Capital dashboard. It's easy to do, and I can tell you the results will benefit you for the rest of your life. As soon as you link those accounts with $100,000 or more in assets, Personal Capital will contact you. And no obligation, by the way, but if you wish, for a free 30-minute portfolio consultation. You just set up your free account, personalcapital.com/twit. And I really want to thank them, not only for their support of Twit, but also for helping me. I've been using them for a couple of years, rebalanced. It's nice. They have an Android Wear app that will tell you, you know, if the market took a dive. He goes, quick, get into bonds. It's actually a really cool thing. Personalcapital.com/twit. Can I get you some water?
Got some.
All you. Right. Can I get you a dog's bollocks?
No. No, thank you.
Side note, I've been using Personal Capital. I like Personal Capital.
Do you? Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Owen. Would you like, these are only available in the Irish Republic. Tatoes. Cheese and onion.
Well, the Irish do know their potatoes. So
they do. It's so weird. I didn't know this. But the Republic of Ireland has one form of potato, and the rest of Ireland has another.
Well, you see, the history of Ireland is ridden with bloody potatoes. So, no, it's just.
There's a potato schism.
Interesting.
Isn't that odd?
Salt and vinegar doesn't seem to be that popular over here for some reason. Oh,
the Brits
love marvelous.
It. Aren't they great?
I love salt and vinegar chips.
Exactly.
All right, we're all going to have salt and vinegar. That might be a Northeast thing. Everybody I know out here loves salt and vinegar.
Yeah. I introduced it to a California friend and he was like, "You trying to poison me?"
It's because of fish and chips, right? You put your malt vinegar all over your chips.
That's right.
Yeah, people out here love it.
In fact, after this podcast, I'm going to get myself a bag of salt and vinegar chips. I'm missing that for 10 days.
If you can get to Ireland, get the Tato brand.
I just got back from Europe. I'm not going back for a bit. I'm going to be in South by in less than 48 hours.
Are you kidding?
No. It's a month of travel, basically. Wow. I was at a wedding in Vancouver and then days here and then back.
South by Southwest is a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, it's always fun. I remember you were crowd surfing once at some event a few years back.
Yeah, I have the world record for longest live streamed crowd surf. That was at the Dignation event at Stubbs Barbecue, South by Southwest. You haven't seen this?
No, I haven't seen this. I think I should.
Is this an official thing from like the Guinness Book
there
of
were
Rec-
people there, not from the Guinness Book of World Records, from another Book of World Records. I think it was the Dog's Bollocks Book of. Yeah, they were different people, but they gave me a plaque.
It's legit.
And I blame Kevin Rose and Alex Albrecht because they talked me into doing this. And then later I found out later this is actually quite dangerous. Meatloaf did it at a concert and they dropped him.
Yeah. You have more support out here, I guess.
Sorry, if you see Meatloaf flying through the air towards you, you get out of the way.
That's what happened. That's what happened. The crowd moved out of the way. He leapt off the stage, and the crowd just said, "No, not me."
Noping the hell out of there.
This was a great, lively crowd. South by Southwest is really a party, isn't it, Miriam? I mean, that's what it's all about. It's a party.
Yeah.
So I'm holding – the shot you're seeing is me. I have a camera with a live U-Pack, and I'm holding it on a staff like Gandalf – And see that backpack? And then...
That's the impressive part. The backpack didn't get ripped off. The wires didn't get ripped out.
No, somebody tweeted, though, that he squeezed my butt and he liked it. So that was a little weird afterwards. But now the shot you're seeing, I'm actually being passed from hand to hand.
Oh, good grief.
That is a world record for the longest live-streamed crowd surf. No one's ever tried it before. That's why. And nor will anyone ever do it again.
Apple introduces the longest crowd surf ever. It's
the longest crowd surf we've ever done.
Lighter than we've ever done.
It's amazing.
Half the Leo at twice the speed.
Oh, this was crazy. I can't believe I did that.
I do remember this so well. What year was that?
Was 2011? Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. I'm sure I could 11? Find out if I looked at the... I think
11.
11? It goes to 11.
It's 10. 2010.
Right, 10? Yeah. So I'm being manhandled at that point. And it's... They put me... I literally went like 100 feet over on hand over hand. It's a wild event. Anyway, nothing of import happens at South By. It's just fun. Is that right?
It's fun and it's good networking.
It's good for,
it's networking.
But that's why we stopped covering it, because it wasn't like there was news there.
No, people launch their apps, and I feel like launching your app there is the worst place in the world to do it.
Not anymore, yeah. Because Facebook and Twitter both took off at South By. Then for a few years after that, everybody said, we're going to be app.
Instagram did
people
too.
Waited
not
all
Facebook,
year, like,
Foursquare. It was Twitter, then it was Foursquare. Was Instagram
was
big
it
at
Instagram?
Maybe.
I thought it was Instagram too.
Apps are so dead. Apps are over. It's over.
Apps are dead.
Apps are dead.
I agree.
It's all about the watch. I do feel like apps have kind of run their course.
What do you put on the watch though, Uncle Leo?
What?
What do you put on the watch?
Peanut butter? What do I put on?
Watch, right?
No. Until this fall, the Apple Watch will not support standalone apps. You put apps on the phone. And then if the app has a watch component, it will just like Android Wear, it'll communicate with the watch, and then the watch will have a thing that it does that's related to the app.
It's just like when the iPhone came out, so took them 18 months to actually work out. People would like to put apps on here besides what you say is okay. Thank you.
So it's kind of silly to talk about the Apple Watch because tomorrow's the event. And we're going to stream it live and talk over it, and everybody's going to yell at us and say, shut up. And then we're going to say, go watch the Apple event yourself if you don't like what we're saying. And, you know, it's the usual. So I will not be streaming it from there because I'm not invited. But Renee Ritchie will be there from MacBreak Weekly, Serenity Caldwell, Jason Snell, and we'll get them the next day in MacBreak talking about it. I don't think Apple will have a watch there. They've said already that April is when the watch will be for sale. But the most fun speculation is how much it will cost.
Oh.
Remember when the iPad was announced? I think Apple seeded rumors that it was going to be $1,000. Everybody said, "Oh, yeah, it's to be $1,000." Apple knowing that in fact it would be almost $1,000, but they seeded those rumors so that when Steve Jobs said, "And it's $499," you could hear an audible gasp. That, by the way, is the last event I ever was invited to. But you could hear people in the auditorium go, "Oh." $4.99.
Well, bear in mind, half of the people in the auditorium are Apple staff,
right?
So, you know,
that's the biggest thing. When you say something earlier about Samsung hearing crickets, like they don't have fanboys and an army waiting to clap at every. Yeah. You said
Apple loads
like a queue of claps.
Apple
they
loads
know when to clap.
The first row with former vice presidents and other dignitaries. The second through, like, fourth row at the Yerba Buena Center will be Apple employees who worked on the watch. Mm-hmm. And then I do think there are other Apple employees in there.
Oh, they're all around the back.
To get the applause going. And then the journalists are kind of desperately trying to sit on their hands, not get excited, because it's unseemly to applaud at an event you're covering. That's unseemly.
Well, it's a breach of honestly, I think it's a breach of journalistic ethics to applaud at a press conference.
Yeah.
But, you know, I must admit, last time I did it, 2003, I felt very ashamed.
2003? What was that for?
Palm Prix.
Ah.
I was so glad to see Palm back. Yes. It's just like, it was, this is, I still have my Palm 3X, and I love it dearly.
Yeah, the euphoric moment.
Yeah, it just, and when I thought they were back, and then they just, died on their asses.
I was applauding silently inside when the iPhone was announced, when the iPad was announced.
The first iPhone was a dog with a great UI.
It was a dog. You're right. And do you think this will be a dog, the watch?
I think it's going to be the best smartwatch out there, simply because Apple is doing what it did with the iPod and the iPad, and the iPhone is coming second generation into the market. You wait for everyone else to make their screw-ups first. You come along with a good custom chip, some good software. I reckon they could clean up on this one.
The rumors are they've made 5 million for day one.
I wouldn't be surprised they sell a million on the first day.
No smartwatch has done that well. Pebble's sold a little more than a million, according to Pebble.
They got a very good Kickstarter going this week.
Yeah, they're new. What do you think of that? We have to mention that Miriam used to work for Pebble.
Oh, right.
Yes. Full disclaimer that I did.
They went back to the well.
I'm very excited about the product, having seen the hardware when it was being created, especially the metal version. Really great hardware. You know, they're keeping true to what they're good at, which is a daytime readable display that's always on and fantastic battery life. But I call a display 64 colors. They're very pastel, so don't expect to just use that to see pictures. It's more like to increase the readability of the UI and give you some sort of color coding for notifications. But
look at that, 66,000 backers. They're almost to $17 million. And it's only been 11 days.
I'm very excited that they launched this finally. Kudos to the team. But I think going to Kickstarter for this is, it's clearly extremely successful.
It's unseemly.
Like it's using Kickstarter as a store, not like you're not pledging anymore. You're buying, you're ordering.
It's unseemly.
And I think that's kind of breaking Kickstarter. I agree. Of course, Kickstarter is on board because they're making a ton of money at it. But like, I just think it's kind of icky to me.
I agree.
And it seems it's a very smart strategy in terms of marketing, very clever.
That's what it was. All about the marketing, because they could have got the money any which way but loose. But I heard people that don't even know about technology talking about, do you hear about this phone? This watch on Kickstarter?
There's There's one thing people are forgetting. If you look at the number of watches, how many pledges are there? How many backers?
66,802.
All right. So that's how many watches they're going to sell out of this, or probably more by the time it ends.
That's not a huge number.
You know, I cannot speak of the numbers in public, but let me put it this way. When Steel launched at CES, that number was peanuts in comparison in terms of number of pre-orders, okay?
So, which number was peanuts? So this one or that one?
This one.
66,000 is peanuts.
Everybody's looking at the 17 million.
17 million is not peanuts.
Nobody's looking at 64.
17 million puts it at like $240 a pop per person.
Well, okay, so there you go. You're right. Now let's talk price.
You bought the watch for $240. Oh, side note, Apple Watch is going to sell out when it goes to launch.
I think you're right.
Just because of the fact that the people that eBay and sit in line to buy it so they can hopefully sell it to somebody else. Half the people in the line for my iPhone were selling their ticket in line or buying the phone to go and sell it online or to somebody else.
So John Gruber has a great article. And it's complete speculation. We'll find out more tomorrow. A couple of things he raises. There are two sizes for each of the three models, 38 millimeters of 42. He says, don't be surprised if the 42 costs a little bit more because it's a little bit bigger. He also says, he quotes Apple's description of the high-end band. Now, a lot of people forget that the band may be sold separately, or a watch with a fancier band may be sold separately. The Steel, which is the middle watch, there's the sport watch. We know that's going to start at $350. We don't know what the Steel will be or the edition. But the Steel, the best band on the Steel is what they call the Link bracelet. And then Gruber quotes this. Listen, this is Apple. Crafted from the same 316L stainless steel alloy as the case, the Link bracelet has more than 100 components. The machining process is so precise, it takes nearly 9 hours to cut the links for a single band.
What?
In part, that's because they are... This is Apple! They aren't simply a uniform size, but they subtly increase in width as they approach the case. Once assembled, the links are brushed by hand with small minks. No, I added the minks. to ensure the texture follows the contour of the design. The custom butterfly closure folds neatly within the bracelet. I mean, they're setting you up for an expensive band.
I'm sorry,
band.
That's not the dog's box. That is utter bollocks. I mean,
it takes them nine hours to make one band.
Yes, 9 hours to one band. Come on, Tim Cook is a COO master when it comes to operations. There's no way that they can.
There's a little Swiss guy. He's sitting there with a loop and he's going for 9 hours.
Yeah, right.
Or there's a million Chinese guys in Shenzhen. It says 9 hours. He's not going to. He's going to lie. You think he's lying?
He might lie. I don't know. I need Apple's copywriter so I can get a date, because they make everything sound
sexy.
So I could date supermodels. my match.com for me. I got to find these people because it's so insane. And you would think that. You'd think he wouldn't lie and say 9 hours if it didn't take 9 hours. But the cost effectiveness of that, it's making me angry.
Small Chinese children will labor for 9 hours without lunch to make your special link bracelet.
Well, they've got an army of robots somewhere.
Maybe it's a robot. Well, anyway.
This is it. There's no way you can do it cost effectively if it takes 9 hours per band.
But it doesn't matter.
Impossible.
It doesn't matter because the prices will reflect that. See, look, it takes the HEC. No, listen to me. It takes 150 minutes per HTC One M8, last year's model, to machine the case.
Oh, okay? That's interesting.
So the new one takes about double that, according to them, because of the dual color, the dual anodizing.
It takes 3 hours to make the case. But they have a lot of machines
So why not hours for Apple? Yeah. All I'm saying is that when the watch sells for $10,000 and the bracelets sell for $1,000 or $2,000 each, you'll see that it makes perfect sense that it takes this long.
Right.
And it will attract the right kind of customer. Trust me on this. Totally right.
Now, got to acknowledge Gruber may have, this may be somebody leaked this to Gruber in order to set up everybody so that when the real price comes out, they'll go, oh, see, it's not so bad. Or these are, and John says, this is just guessing. The Apple Watch Sport, we know, $350 already. The Apple Watch Steel, the middle one, Sport Band, $750. The classic buckle, $849. The Milanese loop, that's the one I want because it looks like water, right? $949. The Link bracelet, $1,499. Or if you want it in space black steel, $1,899. Almost $2,000. That's the middle of the road one. He then says the gold one, the edition, will go up to $10,000.
Yep.
Credible?
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
I'm sure there are fanboys out there who pay it. I mean, there are people who will pay that kind of money for a Rolex, which gives you worse timekeeping than a cheap digital watch you can get from a garage. But, you know, it's a fashion statement. It's not actually a functioning timepiece. I'm sure, as I say, there are fanboys who will pay that. But for the bulk of people who are going to be buying this, if they're going to be selling a million on the first day, they're not going to be spending that kind of cash.
No, they may sell, you know, thousands of the gold one and millions of the sport watch.
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be some git with more money than sense, which decides, yeah, that's a great way to go.
I think the thing you have to understand is it's about Apple's traditionally always been about profit, right? Making profit, not quantity. So they make so much; they're going to make so much profit on those fancy watches, the editions, that they don't need to sell that many. And also, think of the Chinese market, in which they're well established now, and in which it's a status symbol to own an Apple product. Some people there are just going to not care and just spend the money. And they'll do it again every 2 years. Trust me on this. It'll happen.
I'm not so sure about the Chinese market. I've got to say, I've speaking to someone who's living out there at the moment, and they're saying there's almost a kickback against buying Apple at the moment because it's better to be seen to be buying homegrown brands.
Right.
And Xiaomi is doing some really good stuff and Huawei is doing some really good stuff. I'm sure there are plenty of rich people over here who will pay it, but I'm not quite sure about the Chinese market, and I don't think Apple's quite got the lock on that yet.
People will be watching with interest price, but also battery life. We don't know yet. We know it'll last a day, but in what way, we don't know. Apparently, there may be some unannounced features. 9 to 5 Mac. Mark Gurman, who's got great sources, has some interesting ideas. But we'll find out tomorrow. It's all going to be, all will be revealed tomorrow. One of the things he says is that the watch is always measuring your heart rate. Heart rate glance, thanks to the device's heart rate monitor, will allow the user to see their beats per minute anytime. Anytime.
So when they get the bill for the gold band, they can see. Boom, boom, boom.
But you can send it to your loved ones, too. You want to feel my heartbeat? I'm sending it to you right now.
That's slightly creepy.
Apple has said the heart rate sensor will be used to send other users their heartbeat via the communication features.
It actually owns this data as well.
Yeah, well, Apple's been pretty good about insisting that they protect your privacy. You may be skeptical about that.
Actually, Apple are better than most. I am a little bit skeptical since Tim Cook was the only person that turned up when Obama came around to Stanford the other couple of weeks ago
to talk about how everybody needs to pitch in and help the government.
Yeah.
One of we want to protect you.
Least convincing performance since Elton John got married. But yes, it's just.
I we'll find out. It's a product. It's exciting because Apple hasn't announced a new product category since 2010 when they announced the iPad, and you know what a success that was. Tomorrow, 10 in the morning, we'll know. We'll find out. Should be interesting.
It's going to be an exciting day, I think.
You know, it's funny how, and this is Apple's so good at shaping the message, no matter what they announce. It's kind of a geek holiday, isn't it?
I've got to say, I'm looking forward to it so much, if just that we can no longer have our news feeds clogged up with the new Apple Watch. It will cure leprosy and raise the dead. And, you know, it's just, okay, let's get it out there. Let's see what they've got and let's critique it openly.
I have heard from a very reliable source that the watch is not the only thing that will be announced tomorrow. The much-awaited new MacBook Air Retina, supposedly, now this comes from a source that is impeccable, will be also announced tomorrow. And it is time for Apple to refresh their MacBooks because they are a little bit behind. Both Dell, Lenovo, and others are using Intel's Broadwell chips. Those came out in January. So it is time for Apple to do this. It would be a logical time to do so. A Retina MacBook Air would be a great product.
I don't really care about that so much. I want that super thin, light one that they've been talking about, the 12-inch one.
The iPad, the new iPad.
No.
I think this will be that. This will be that.
The 12-inch MacBook Air.
Yeah, this will be that, the 12-inch MacBook Air, yeah.
The super thin, I'm buying that tomorrow. I don't care about the watch.
With only one connector.
I was going to say.
I bought the original MacBook Air the day it was announced, and I lived perfectly happily ever after. And look, everybody's got MacBook Airs now. So don't worry. It's just a matter of getting used to it.
So this new USB Type-C connector, a couple of things that it has going for it. One is, like Lightning, it's reversible.
Yeah.
Hallelujah. Because I'm always sticking that micro upside down into the slot.
Wrong hole, Uncle Leo.
Exactly.
Wrong hole.
It's bad. Just bad all day. But what is weird about what we've seen in the rumors is that this USB-C could also do power. Mm. It could do everything. So the rumor is there will be one and only one connector on this new MacBook Air that will do everything. Power, data, video. Yes, it can be for your your 4K display. All of it out of this new Ethernet, everything.
So they're going to come out with this new awesome squid dongle with like eight arms.
You know, I would laugh at that. I would laugh at that. But look what they did with the Mac Pro. It's all about the dongles.
That's just so much. Again, it's Apple. I'm sure they paid a lot of money. Paid a lot of attention to how they're going to work that out. I just need to see it. The whole hype stuff, I have to shut myself down from it because, like he was saying, it's going to cure leprosy. You get so much hype in your mind. Just shut up and get here tomorrow, 1 o'clock for me. I got to wait till the afternoon. You guys get to wake up to it. I just need to see the stuff so I understand it. Because when you say it, it's like, what are you going to do that makes that functional for normal people? Again, it's a finite group of people that are nerds and love everything Apple does. So we'll see.
I'm skeptical on the USB-C because it doesn't bring anything to the table that Lightning and Thunderbolt don't already do. And those are the two things that Apple is using. And so I don't see them. I mean, look, there's one device out there already with Type-C USB, and that's the Nokia N1 tablet, which was announced back in December and was finally, we were able to play with it at Mobile Congress. It's an Android tablet made by a part of Nokia that is not absorbed by Microsoft. And it's a very nice looking iPad mini clone with a USB Type-C connector for charging and data and power. But on a MacBook Air, I don't see it. I think that they might have the USB Type-C connector and include a dongle to connect regular USB devices to the MacBook Air because it's thinner. But I still think they would you know, they would still need some sort of lightning or thunderbolt connector to do everything else.
It would be quite a departure.
And they have their own standards.
But the thinking is that this is not a standalone device. This is not your only computer. This is your new accessory computer.
I see.
And that in order to make it really thin and elegant, now, and certainly this would get a lot of attention, this single connect, this thing, I mean, I can totally see Johnny Ive saying, and we've eliminated all the connectors. There's just one.
You're mocking my people, sir.
I love Johnny Ive.
Oh, me too.
I love him. But... And this is the new design-focused Apple. So, Miriam, you're thinking along the lines of a functionality-focused company.
That's not what
we're seeing.
Lightning is a better solution for the exact same problem. Why would they go to USB-C when Lightning does it better? It's
because
a faster connector.
It's
reversible. It's Apple. It's got power on it.
The thing is also, the USB Implementers Forum, they're demoing the Type-C cable about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And they were quite bearish about how quickly it was going to be adopted.
Yeah, and nobody's done it.
Now, it may be that Apple has taken a jump on the game, but as you say, they've got Lightning and Thunderbolt. So,
but they had FireWire before Lightning and Thunderbolt. What happened to that?
Yeah, look what happened to yeah exactly. Look how well
Apple,
that did.
I see so many people with Apple devices that still use a USB 3 hard drive. Like, I've got 30 of these things sitting around. I could get a Thunderbolt drive, but I don't want to because if I want to do something else with it, I mean,
it's too expensive.
You say these things,
the cables are expensive.
Things, the mass market does not use those devices for storage and things like that.
And
everybody knows who USB is, they use USB. SD card, so whatever.
And this is designed.
Apple does whatever they want to do, but that's not how the world works.
This is designed for somebody who has a Mac Pro or an iMac and has Thunderbolt, and this is just your little thing that you take with you. I'm sure there'll be a little dock that'll give you, you know, a connection, or maybe they'll use continuity and handoff and magic.
It's like your Chromebook.
Dust and,
you don't need to plug in anything. You just have the internet.
It's all in there.
Yeah.
Send everything over our network. Get a time capsule with a hard drive and ship everything through that. You don't need any connectors whatsoever.
This is a breaking story.
This is the magic.
I have this on good authority. Watch tomorrow. We did think for a long time the watch is such a huge announcement. There's no reason Apple would dilute it with anything else. But this would be kind of interesting.
It would tie in with one more thing, certainly.
Yeah.
I
don't think there'll be an Apple TV. We will see new Apple TVs this year for sure. Beats, I think the word is pretty clear that Beats will be revised not in iOS 8.2, which is coming out for the watch, not even in 8.3, but 8.4, probably will be talked about during WWDC. Actually, that's an interesting story. Let's take a break and talk about Apple's plan with Beats is starting to become a little bit clearer. And since you're wearing Beats headphones, Odakta, I think we're going to let you...
I think all we're talking about is phones today. This is phone.
No more
Sunday.
Phone. We're going to talk about music, man. No more phone. And then there's one more phone story. I'm very intrigued by Google's plans. And again, Google's not confirmed this, I think, to become a wireless carrier.
Yeah.
Well, and a very different kind of wireless.
Desperate to do it.
I'm desperate for them to do it. Let's have it happen. Before we go on, our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your beautiful website, your blog, your online store easy to use, elegant, mobile responsive. That means every Squarespace site looks great no matter what size screen. Giant iMac, 30-inch screen, HD, quad HD, or a little mobile phone. It's simple for you to use. It's very powerful. And I got to emphasize beauty. It is aesthetically fabulous, which is why so many artists, photographers, designers, chefs, people who have a great aesthetic sense love Squarespace. Squarespace 7 is fantastic. They have added something called Cover Pages. Lets you set up a beautiful one-page online presence in instant, creating a landing page. It could be for you, for your brand, but could also be for a new product. The support is remarkable. You're not going to need it, but if you do, 24/7 live chat and email right from the Squarespace offices in New York City. They have e-commerce, the best e-commerce of any system. I mean, they have ShipStation. They help you with shipping. They'll help you with tax calculations. It's all built in. You've got to try it. And the nice thing is they're so confident. You just go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. You can set up a Squarespace site completely free for 2 weeks. import data from your old site, get a real sense of what Squarespace can do for you, all before you buy. You don't even give them a credit card. Take advantage of that. Start a trial. No credit card required. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. And when you do sign up, all I ask you, use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. You get 10% off your purchase. And that means, you know, subscribe for a year. That's what I do. I pay a year at a time. $8 a month. And when you get that year, they even get the give you the domain name for free. Squarespace.com. Offer code TWIT. We'll be back with more of our fabulous panel. But first, if you missed anything this week, oh, you missed a lot. Let's take a look at what happened on TWIT this week.
Previously on TWIT. TWIT Live Specials.
This is Mike Elgin at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. On so much news to report, so many new gadgets, toys, technologies, and trends.
Go, 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 go!
Tech News Today.
It's really great to see lots of very innovative technologies and products from lots of different countries.
You can attest to it, and you have now fingerprint on your phones.
Security Now.
We have the guys who have hacked not only cars, but UAVs.
Pretty much all modern cars, the high-end ones, will have a telematics unit, which is a cell phone modem that had a buffer overflow. If you played all the right tones to it, you could reprogram its firmware.
Before you buy.
This is a high-res music player. It'll even play back FLAC, Apple lossless, the highest quality high-res file.
It's a definite buy for the Fio X1.
TWIT. I get your touch surface right here.
You
can't tell I'm naked.
No. Don't pan out. No, God. How embarrassing.
Yeah.
So as long as we're talking Apple, let's talk about Beats. So the story line now seems to be developing that Apple's not going to offer a free version of streaming at all. You know, Spotify, and the music industry hates this. Mm-hmm. Spotify does. Everybody does. RDO does. Taylor Swift said, no, you can't. I don't want you to put out my album on the free version. Spotify said, well, too bad. So Taylor Swift said, fine, I'm not putting my stuff on Spotify.
And the quality of their music went up immeasurably.
I don't know if it hurt Spotify. It probably didn't.
It got them a lot of great publicity. Taylor Swift isn't going to be hurting because she's still selling albums.
She sold a huge number of albums.
Yeah. You know, there's an awful lot of depressed teenage girls out there. So, yeah, I don't think it hurts Spotify at all just for them to say, right, fine, if you don't want us, you don't want us.
It does feel like, though, that she kind of represented the music industry planting a flag saying, we think free services undervalue our what we do. Mm-hmm. We don't get enough money out of it. And apparently what Apple's doing is capitalizing on that, saying to the record industry, don't. And give us exclusives. We're going to revamp Beats. It's going to be, I think, $7.99, less than the $10 everybody else is charging. And the goal of Apple is to have lots of exclusive launches. So when Madonna's new album comes out, it's first available on Beats, then a month later available everywhere else. And that would, let me ask you, Doctor, what do you listen to streaming music? Do you use a streaming music service?
I used to. I don't any longer. I'm with the Taylor Swift Nation on not Spotifying things and not having things for free.
So because you want to support artists, you buy the music.
Yes. And I'm just old school. I like having things, quote unquote, on demand and not having to use the app or the internet. Like I use iTunes Match so I can download something, but I like having it on my phone. And it's one of those things where Apple is behind the game as far as a streaming service, but they're ahead of the game on getting people to pay for product.
Right.
So if they come to you and say, hey, just pay us $7.99 or whatever the amount is, a lot of people are going to do that. And a lot of people are going to want to do exclusives with them because it's Apple and because of the title they have. I think that they're going to take Beats to another level with that.
Do you think the horse has left the barn?
I think it's a remarkable turnaround. I mean, you remember 10 years ago, how the record industry hated Apple for dictating to them what price they would sell their music at. Whereas they wanted to sell it at one price, Apple was saying, no, you're going to sell it at the price we set
Apple
it at.
Apple broke the album by selling 99-cent singles.
Indeed. And now it's coming back round, and Apple is saying, you know what, guys, let's play nice. We can both make some money out of this. And admittedly, and I agree with what you're saying, artists don't get paid enough on Spotify. They don't get paid enough on Pandora. It's an endemic problem for the industry. I'm just intensely suspicious of Apple saying, right, we're going to be the gatekeepers on this one.
Well, they did a really good job. The reason when everybody hated it is because someone else was taking control of the money, right? But you fall in line when everybody starts using that service and you accept that and you get paid and you realize that CDs are going away. And now even buying albums are going away and streaming is coming in. So for Apple to come in and say, hey, you're going to get more of a chunk of the pie than 80% of those people that are paying on a free service, especially when you're giving us exclusives and bringing people in as adopters, at least you're going to get some money from me. So even if you're skeptical, Apple, you're going to say, hey, at least if I go with them, I know I'm going to get money from something if someone's playing my songs or listening to my album. So it's a different dynamic, and you believe and trust in Apple now if you're an artist, especially because a lot of artists are doing independent launches. I mean, they put albums out on iTunes with no marketing, no video launch now. You know, like Beyonce, her last album came out
directly on iTunes overnight,
Wednesday night.
Yep.
Turn on iTunes, a million downloads the next day.
And a video for each song. No one knew she was doing it. It was boom.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, not everybody's Beyonce, obviously, but I'm saying if they could land places like that, or like how Jay-Z did his album release with Samsung. I know people that wanted to buy the phone just to get Jay-Z's album because they're Jay-Z freaks and they need to have his music first.
Didn't Prince give away his album with the Guardian or the Telegraph or something?
That
was a bad one. That one didn't work.
Other bands have tried it. Radiohead put an album out and said, just pay us what you
want.
That didn't work too badly for them. It did make as
but
much.
But that's Radiohead.
Yeah. You know, it's
so. And that's what I said. Bigger names is going to be better, but
I would never, ever say that the music industry could get a clue. Right? These guys are clueless. They're the definition of clueless. So this clue they're getting from Apple is meaningless. I think the real clue you get, you take away from Taylor Swift's shenanigans from Radiohead is, from all of these, is the best thing to do is forget the labels, create a fan base, build a community, and go direct to them and eliminate all of this other crap. Because who's supporting Taylor Swift? Why could she do that? Her fans who love her and wanted to buy the album.
If you listen to Spotify, they'll tell you that they made Taylor Swift, and by discovery, we helped build her fan base.
That ain't true.
Yeah,
she built her fan base and did it with very savvy, with great music.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the same thing with the Arctic Monkeys in the UK from my hometown.
Yeah.
They encourage their fans to go out, share the music, get out online, build up a fan base, and they went mega. And they hate record companies. You know, they even in interviews with music journalists, they insist on buying their own drinks. They're that much purist about it. But they built a great following about it.
But now you have to be a great musician. You have to have something new and exciting.
You've got to have talent.
You've got to have talent. You've got to build an audience. But if you were the Beatles today, I think the last thing you'd want to do is sign a deal with EMI or Capitol. I think the most important thing to do would be get a website.
Yep. If you've actually got the talent to do it, fine. Record companies are very good at pimping out
crap
manufactured bands
and manufactured
keeping
artists.
Simon Cowell in Rolls Royces and that sort of thing. And yeah, if you've got the talent, get out and do it yourself because they have nothing to offer.
I think that's the real lesson. And I think Apple and the record companies got the wrong message from Taylor Swift and everybody else. The real lesson isn't, oh no, music has to cost money and there shouldn't be a free service. The real message is we don't need the record industry.
Mm.
They're the guys.
I will tell you, just for reality check outside of your bubble, you still need radio play and you need spin and you need hype.
You're kidding. You need a DJ?
Okay, let me tell you something. There's countless artists that I could just name, and I'm not going to waste my time, that started off doing their own YouTube thing. And I'll just take somebody stupid like Soulja Boy. Before anybody ever heard him, he had millions of followers on YouTube, millions of views on his videos. Mac Miller, same thing. He was 2 years on YouTube, had a huge fan base. But you know what? Until he got on the radio, regular people didn't know who he is. I knew who he was because I'm on YouTube all the time.
I thought Soulja Boy was really a YouTube creation. I don't think radio helped Soulja Boy. I don't think radio helped Tyler, the Creator. I think
Soulja Boy was on YouTube for 2 years. He gets on the radio. Next thing you know, everybody's doing his stupid dance, and he's known all over the world. There's a different
radio
level
did not sell Soulja Boy's dance.
Okay.
Did it?
It's a stupid thing. I'm telling you, yes, they do. Yeah. When you see people doing all these dances, you hear about it, but then as soon as somebody takes it and puts it on the radio and puts it on MTV, it's viable. It actually goes viral, as stupid as that sounds, but it gets to the masses. So there's a lot of people that can make a career, yes, doing their tours and doing their circus. There's a lot of people who've never blown up. They never will. We'll never hear about them, but they make a living every day. But if you want to go mainstream, you do need those things. I mean, I'm not saying you need a record label to do it, but you better find somebody who's great at getting you on radio or getting you on television, because you need those things.
I will say,
and that's what the record company gets.
You do raise a good point. I mean, I hate to mention Soulja Boy in the same name as this because it's going from Sublime to the Ridiculous, but Justin Bieber, for example, was very big on YouTube, but it wasn't until he got on radio that he started making
really
stupid amounts
perfect
of money
example.
Out of it.
Really?
I told you, I can give you a ton of list of people. Tons of people just like that. And that's a perfect example. Justin Bieber, same thing. YouTube sensation, cute, whatever. And as soon as he got with Usher, Usher got him hooked up with a label, got him on the radio. And now everybody's baby, baby, baby. So I'm telling you, you live in a bubble of thinking the internet's great and cool and all. But, you know, still need the real world.
Who listens to the radio?
Everybody.
You guys? You're an old man. Like me. I'm on the radio. I don't listen. Remember, now, Chris is 17. You listen to the radio, Chris?
It's on everywhere.
Where's it on?
When people play music, they go to the radio. When people play music in public, they're playing from the radio.
Wait, there's such a thing as the radio still?
I live in the tech bubble, and all we listen to is Spotify.
No,
how dare you?
No, I watch my kids. They're not techno literate. They watch
so
YouTube.
People can't afford to download music or pay $99 a month for a subscription base. They can't.
Where
go
do you even buy a radio?
It comes free in your car.
Oh,
yeah.
Radio so in car. Okay. So when you're in your car, I'll grant you, when you're in your car, people listen to the radio. Where else?
That's enough time.
I actually wake up. I'm one of those
Leo's
old-fashioned
a slave
people.
Driver. Nobody in there listens to the radio.
You have a clock radio?
I have a clock radio, and I wake up, and it clicks straight on.
I had a clock radio when I was 18.
Hey, just because the technology is old doesn't mean you've got
to
throw it out.
You're just a digital grandpa. You're the cool grandpa that still has an iPhone. You're the guy that everybody wants to hang out with when they go. No, normal grandparents aren't like you.
But really, radio, I mean, are there people who, like, break new music on radio? Really? Who, where?
For it to tidal wave in the mainstream, yes. We've had this conversation like two or three times, and you live in a digital world.
I like to pretend
everything breaks on Spotify.
I didn't have this conversation.
But it doesn't.
You know, I think Owen is right. Leo, you and I live in a world of digital where we don't listen to the radio and don't watch TV, and the closest thing that comes to the radio is when I go on a long road trip and I listen to XM radio, and it's only one channel that I listen to, and it's like the new wave station, because you know I'm old.
Don't you guys have iPods?
Who?
You. Don't you have an iPod? Why do you listen to radio?
What do you mean an iPod? I have a phone.
No, I'm just saying. What's on the radio?
Great device for that.
Can I just so you could just be a regular person for like 30 seconds in the real world? In the real world. No, it's not possible. But in the real world, some people don't give their kids. My daughter's got an iPod, an iPhone, a Mac Air, but not everybody's balling out like me with their kids. So what do? They give them a little headset and they listen to the radio and they get in their car and they put it on radio because there's no cursing and there's no foul language. They can trust the music that's coming in and they get brainwashed. There's a lot of things where a large market of people can't afford to have an iPod and a Spotify account and all those things that you're saying, like that's where music gets discovered. Music still gets discovered heavily on the radio, and I know a lot of kids that sit there and watch MTV Raps and the Rock Channel on MTV all day long in the background. That's how the real world still works. And the world you live in San Francisco, where people pay $4,000 for a shoebox and a woman makes the news for living in a garage for $1,000 a month, isn't the real world. It's not the real world. Get outside that box and come over here and hang out. Not with me, because I'm still balling. But go back to the American folks that can't afford stuff because you're diluted in your mind about how you think the world works with discovery. It's not real. I still love you.
Well, somebody's got to tell the radio business because they're collapsing. Oh, you guys, three people listen to the radio. They're applauding.
I've got to say I'm with them on that
one. All right,
one.
They do too. All right. You're going to be sorry when the radio goes away. How will we ever find any music?
But by then, everybody will have their free Spotify account.
I'm waiting for
that. By then, the world will get on board. And most regular people, not tech people, always listen to Pandora. Everybody I know complains or pays for Pandora.
No, Pandora is fine, yeah, for most people.
Most non-techie people think that's the best entry. That's the gateway drug into the tech and streaming services is Pandora.
No, Pandora is much bigger than the next 10, yeah. I'm glad to know radio's okay, because I tell you, the radio industry thinks it's dying, but I'm glad to know the radio's okay with real people. It's surprising to me that people discover music. What station you listen to, Chris?
I don't listen to any station. I just hear it playing.
Oh, he doesn't listen to any station. He just hears it. It's ambient.
I was going to say, is this a podcast? Or don't you run like a podcast? I mean, no, I know you're talking video.
I make the bulk of my money on radio. I got to point out the radio. I actually work in radio, so I do hope radio survives. But I'm surprised when I hear people listening to music radio and say that's how they discover music. That shocks me.
Get on board with me, Captain. You're on the wrong ship right now. you still want to be in people's ears. You better hope the radio
even,
is still alive.
I got to tell you, so the company I work for, which used to be Premier Radio and Clear Channel, has renamed itself not iHeart Radio, iHeart Media. They don't like the word radio. You won't hear them talk about radio at all. Nobody. You go to radio conferences, they're all saying, how do we survive the collapse of the radio industry?
Because they hear people like you talking about it.
And their argument is to stop calling it radio? I mean,
well, they want to be internet. They want to, you know, that's what iHeartRadio, they're trying to.
Yeah.
They're trying to say, well, I know kids today, they're not going to listen, so we got to do it on the internet where they can hear us.
So it's interesting to me because the one thing we haven't talked about at all so far, we've talked about like song purchases, album purchases, streaming services like Spotify and Pandora. We've talked about regular radio. I've even brought up XM radio. But one thing we haven't talked about, which I actually do listen to a lot, is internet radio. And what I mean by that is people who are streaming 24/7, they're DJing, they're setting what I'm not picking what I'm listening to. And I love those stations. I listen to a whole bunch of them. That are a lot of them are in the Bay Area for some reason or whatsoever. I guess, you know, it's a bubble again. But the point is, those, all you need for those is like an app like TuneIn on your phone and off you go. They use Shoutcast, which is an old standard that was created alongside Winamp, and they're excellent. You know, one of them, the ones I like the best is Dog Lounge. There's a bunch of them. Based in SF as well, that are like electronica dance and that are really, really good. Has anybody listened to those? Because for me, the biggest thing about that I hate about radio, official radio, like what we, you know, can get out of the airwaves, is the sound quality is crap. Even XM sounds like crap.
Oh, XM is actually worse than XM is Sirius. Satellite radio is not high fidelity.
So that's why I'm saying.
But there is HD radio out there, and most cars now, I think, have HD radio.
Mm. Yeah, but I was going to say,
I've listened to music that way also, and there's a couple of stations in New York, like Hot 97. I can't get them where I'm at, so I always listen to their app. I have their app on my phone, and a lot of people listen to music like that. Like, my one friend's from Seattle, and they listen to – I'm like, what are you listening to? And they're like, oh, it's a station in Seattle. And that's what he's always listening to because they stream online. So there's different DJs, like what he's talking about, and radio stations you can find.
Well, I just hope my bosses don't hear me talking this way, but I just
– Well, that's why they changed the iHeartMedia. Leo's not supporting the team.
There's Soma FM here in SF, and there is KCRW LA.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to listen to some quality radio. And then I listen to CBC, the Canadian radio. They have a bunch of really awesome streams playing some really awesome. Talk about music discovery. That's the best music discovery.
Actually, the BBC
right
has
there.
Some great music stations.
BBC, actually, it's kind of depressing because the main BBC music station, Radio 1, but that's aimed at the younger market. And I've started listening to Radio 2 now, and it's just like, wow, tracks from the 80s and 90s. Yes, I am getting a bit older.
That is depressing, But is it 4? Is Radio 4? Somebody's
Radio 4 is gold. It's our equivalent of NPR, but it's so much better.
Yeah, I love it.
But the big advantage where internet radio comes in over something like Radio 2, 3, and 4 is that you can get decent pirate radio, or what used to be called pirate radio stations, setting up.
I love
and
that.
And not having to... If you're trying to tune into Radio 4 and getting sort of a jungle pirate station on the virtually the same wave band, internet radio makes it so good for that, but it's a question of getting to your market. And pirate radio, what we used to call pirate radio, spreads around by word of mouth. And I haven't yet found a decent app which allows me to skim through the internet radio stations that are out there and find something that sounds good. So if you've got any suggestions, always up for that.
K-Pig.
I'd make one, but Uncle Leo said apps are dead like the radio. So,
I'm just getting old. Help. TuneIn Radio is an app.
Love TuneIn Radio. Love it.
iOS and Android and Windows Phone. And you can search. There's a directory. You can look around. You can explore for radio stations. The other one is, honestly, anybody who's got a Mac with iTunes installed, iTunes has a section.
Actually, iTunes Radio is excellent. It's not just some broadcast
radio.
Stuff, but
this
they're
is
on
iTunes Internet Radio section, which has an entire directory again and searchable.
I was told that's going away.
Well, I hope it doesn't because I really.
I agree. I mean, but there's so many ways you can listen to internet radio now. You don't.
True.
Yeah. Let's take a break. I'm being a little, you know, I'm being a little devil's advocate because, in fact, I do work in radio and I have my fingers crossed for radio. I'm just surprised to hear that people still discover music by listening to a radio station. It doesn't feel like the Rodney Bingenheimers of the world are still around.
It doesn't look quite. I mean, I remember about 4 years ago, four or five years ago, listening to Radio 4, and they were doing their roundup of music of the week, and they had a band, a Norwegian band called Kings of Convenience, and they played a little track of that. And then cut it out. Now, the radio was useless for getting into new bands, but then you went online, you searched for them, you downloaded some stuff, you then went and bought some albums. That's the way it works now, I think.
And isn't it interesting that Apple just hired a DJ from Britain? Was he a BBC radio DJ?
Who was this guy?
Oh,
I missed this completely.
You didn't see this? Yeah.
No.
They're
hiring the BBC. They are hiring a pretty... Well, actually, that's not entirely true.
Yeah, DJ Zane.
Zane Lowe. Radio 1.
Really?
What? He's going to work for Apple.
He's good. Okay.
His last show was March 5th.
Yeah, no, he's actually a pretty good DJ. He's got good taste in music, terrible dress sense, but that tends to be par for the course these days. Maybe I'm just getting old, but you know.
Hey, you are getting old. That's not your attire, Pop-Pop. Oh, there's a panel of grandpas over there today. Well, back in my day, we used to wear suits.
I'm still very liberal, you know.
But I frankly think that this tells you where Apple wants to go, is curated. That they want to do discovery on their new Beats thing, and they want people like this who are well known for helping people discover new music do the same on the internet. All right. Zane Lowe is in his 40s, so he doesn't count. That's what the chat room's telling me. God, I'm so old. We're going to take a break, come back with more. I want to tell you about the number one most innovative company in 2015, according to Fast Company. What do you think that would be if you were going to pick? Warby Parker? Yeah. Let me get my Warbys out here. Warby Parker is bringing changes to the eyewear industry. Changes because, frankly, the eyewear industry got subsumed by one big company who artificially keeps the price of eyewear, frames, and glasses up. And the guys at Warby are classic internet entrepreneurs who said, there's got to be a better way. A better option. No more bland choices. No more overpriced frames. Glasses at Warby Parker start at $95. That's including the prescription lenses. I use progressives. Those start at $295. That's about half what I pay. They also use these kind of cool digital freeform lens, so you don't see they're smooth. They're beautiful, advanced progressive technology. Digital application means you get a larger field of vision, so the design is more precise than traditional models of progressives. All glasses include, and no charge, anti-reflective, anti-glare coating, a hard case, and cleaning cloth. I am a fan of Warby. Now, you might say, well, how am I going to buy glasses online? This, the Warby Parker Home Try-On Program. So I want you to go to warbyparker.com/twit and choose five pairs of glasses. They've got really gorgeous frames. And they will send you this box, and you can try them on. You can show them to your friends. You can post pictures of yourself on Instagram. You could say, what do you think of these? I just picked these out because I need new frames. They include a special frame box and a prepaid shipping label, so it's very easy to return them. You choose the frames you want. If you haven't entered the prescription, you can get them in sunglasses, but if you have a prescription, give them the prescription details. Warby Parker takes care of the rest. Here's something nice. For every pair, I like these. I'm going to go with these, I think. For every pair of glasses you purchase, Warby Parker sends another pair to someone in need using the nonprofits like Vision Spring. I think that is so cool.
Like the OLPC.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the OLPC, the one laptop per child. One pair of glasses per child. Get the free home try-on. Get a free 3-day shipping on your final frame purchase. And do it all at Warby, W-A-R-B-Y, Parker, parker.com/twit. I've been buying my glasses at Warby Parker for a while now. Very, very happy. Yes, sir?
Remember, I don't know if you know this, but on my Twitter, it says that I'm from the future. Remember earlier I had the fresh thing and you had the fresh? Well, look what I got.
What's that? Oh, man, how'd you know?
And guess what? They love me a little bit more than they love you, because look at this nice, fancy box.
I know, you got a fancy one. Let me see. Let me see. Which ones are you thinking of? This is just pure coincidence. We did not know. We did not set this up, right?
It really is.
I've never met you before.
I'm from the future.
Okay.
I'm from the future. You didn't know what I was doing.
So you buy the products before we advertise them.
Obviously, I'm doing it wrong because I'm not saving any money.
Oh, that's all right.
I need to go back.
Let me see.
And they're actually not for me. I'm buying them for my daughter. So these are girl glasses.
Oh, that's another thing. Yeah. I mean, really? Kids' glasses, if you have children, kids' glasses are very expensive.
These are tiny for my big head.
Yeah.
You know that they're not for me.
I don't know. I think that's kind of a good look.
That's it's also quite handy because kids go through glasses. You know, they get broken all the time.
Yeah. Let's see here. That's a good look on you. Do you wear glasses?
I used to wear glasses. Then I got LASIK.
Oh, smart man. Well, I bet you wear sunglasses. Warby Parker's got them, too. WarbyParker.com/Twit.
They look a bit too stylish if they're buying. If you're buying them for your daughter, you need them to be complete man repellers.
Yes, so, exactly. You know,
my daughter is a purple belt in jujitsu and now an orange belt in karate.
Nice.
She is her own man protector.
That's nice. That is great. Hey, speaking of that, this is International Women's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for telling me that, Ian.
My wife was reminding me about it. Pointing out that it's time for me to take her out to dinner to celebrate International Women's Day, and I tried to explain to her that, in fact, she should be taking me out to dinner to celebrate her independence.
Yes.
And then decided to shut up because I might want to have sex again this month. So it's just...
So what we have not covered the Warby... the Kleiner-Perkins trial, but apparently it's gotten kind of salacious. I've not been reading about this. It's the San Francisco Superior Court. A former partner is suing Kleiner, which is one of the big VC firms, asking for $16 million in damages for gender discrimination. And I have not been following this, but I have a friend who has, and they keep saying, have you heard the latest?
Yeah. I mean, even my next-door neighbor said to me today, she's like, have you heard about this Kleiner-Perkins thing?
I have.
Because it's looking pretty bad for them. I mean, they are... the Silicon Valley blue chip venture capitalists.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they were there right at the start, and the stuff that's coming out in this trial is just, you know, they had an away weekend with investors and clients, and it was decided not to have women there because women might bring the event down.
You know how women do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one of the investigators put a graph in there looking at how well women's partners' investment had gone compared to men's, and they were doing much better than the men.
Oh,
they
weren't
getting promoted. It's looking pretty bad. I mean, not Wall Street bad, but by the standards of California, pretty bad.
Well, you know, I'm not really, as a woman, I'm not really surprised, you know, working in tech. There's a lot of BS out there, and I think the VCs, at least, you know, a lot of the ones I've interacted with are generally pretty sexist.
They're boys clubs, aren't they, really?
It's a total boys club, and it's total douchiness.
Yeah.
And it's just reinforcing a lot of the stereotypes. And I really hate to say it because, you know, it shouldn't have to be that way. You know, like there's no reason for it. Just none.
Yeah. I mean, it's... And some of the stuff that's coming out in the trial is just, you know, it just seemed that men get away with a lot more in not just in this company, but and you've seen this across the whole of Silicon Valley as well, that the tech bros down at the marina in San Francisco, it's just, I don't even go there anymore because you just grind through the teeth enamel, mustn't really punch this out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that word, but no.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
It's a very, very exclusive boys club.
Mm. Another tech.
And that boys club looks like a very different shade of the same color.
Kind of a light shaded boys club. Actually, unless you're Indian, and then you're more than welcome, because we know that Indians are very good at math.
There we go.
I'm joking. Hillary? No, I'm not joking. Sad.
It's sad. It's sad you can't make jokes anymore.
When you're in a hole, stop digging, mate.
Now it's everybody. You got to watch you say.
This is a weird tech story, but I think it is a tech story. Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State, as you know, never had an official .gov email address while she was Secretary of State, even though she was supposed to. Instead, was using her own private email address. Now we find She was running her own Linux-based email server out of her house. Right on.
Smart woman.
That seems good.
Smart woman.
Now, it's you're not supposed to do that, obviously.
I do question if she was running the Linux server herself.
Oh,
yes.
Maybe she had somebody else. And then somebody tweeted. Now, I don't know if it's Linux or not. Maybe Fox got this wrong because somebody tweeted the address.
Oh, it came from Fox. It's probably wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, Fox get things wrong. I don't know why about that.
Somebody tweeted the address. It's HTTPS, which is nice. I mean, she's, you know, got it secure. mail.clintonemail.com. And if you go there, it's running Windows Server 2008, RS, I think RS2, RS1. And it's running an Outlook email client connected to Microsoft Exchange. ClintonEmail.com apparently is the
2008. She's obviously a traditionalist, though.
Yeah. Well, she, you know, we don't want to move fast.
I don't know why this is such a big deal.
I understand it's wrong because your government email is part of the public record, and it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the people. You know, for instance, every president's email and documents and records, they're all public. I mean, they're not necessarily open to the public, but they're kept by the archivist and eventually open to the public. It's part of history. And she knew those rules, clearly. She's a savvy person. On the other hand, I got to give her a little respect for, first of all, having the balls to do this, right? And then for running it out of her house.
How else is Bill going to use Match.com privately?
I think that's it.
This is the question. How else is Bill going to use his internet privately? I mean, the guys, I'm sure it's for the husband. She's like, look, I know you're out here doing what you do when you're on these tours.
Oh, you think it's Bill?
Please just keep the emails public. Yeah, yeah. It's Bill's.
Yeah.
But it's so unfortunate because you had that whole meme with Hillary using her BlackBerry in the plane with everyone
around. Right.
And now this is the come down. But she's not alone on this. The Republican National Committee got censured for this a couple of years ago for sending political emails on their own servers rather than the White House ones.
That's right. You're not supposed to do any fundraising or campaigning within the White House or within a government office. You're supposed to go over to the, you know, the RNC and do it from there.
But for Hillary to say, "Oh, I didn't know," I think she knew. Yeah.
She's running a small business server in her basement.
Yeah, and the thing about saying stuff like that is, again, the way the world works, it's very easy for somebody to find out if you knew or not. So unless you plan on setting everything on fire.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good point, is that there's no way she could hide this.
No.
No.
I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah. That's why, but people say things all the time. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I did have a mail server in my basement.
He had a server in my basement.
I did.
And then, you know.
I do. So. And I have a barbecue smoker out back because I love the barbecue.
Apparently he's gone vegetarian now.
He's gone vegetarian. Really well. Have you seen him lately? He looks great.
He looks
slender.
Slender, slightly haggard, I would have said.
Well, he's an old man. What do you want?
A man needs beef once in a while, you know? It's just like...
I bet you Bill's listening to Spotify.
I listen to the radio. I get my music.
I'm not sure I want to see Bill's browser history, to be honest. Well,
Leo. This is uncanny.
I'll do it a little too well. You know, I don't know why I channel Bill for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, Etsy. On, keep going. This is great.
I can't do it anymore. I can't go on. Etsy files for a IPO, $100 million. That seems low.
Reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, where's the billion-dollar valuations and all of that?
You do wonder if their share prospectus was done with, like, glitter and little stick-on bills around it. But, $100 million's not bad.
I'm pretty sure that's how other presentations go down like that. I'm almost positive.
You know why it's not bad? Because last year they had a $4.9 million loss on $108 million in revenue.
Someone should tell Twitter that because they're still...
Yeah, that's true. I love Etsy. Is that shameful for me to reveal?
No.
I love Etsy.
Everybody loves Etsy.
Etsy's great.
Especially if you want quirky stuff. Like I saw this How to Train My Dragon hoodie. It doesn't get shipped to me until March. But I saw it all over the internet.
I suppose you're going to say that's for your daughter, too.
They don't make it in dinosaur size, even though it's a dragon. it is. So she could wear it. I could feel proud that she's wearing it. But I was like, oh, let me try Etsy. And sure enough, it was on there for pre-order because that's where creative things are made.
This is why I need a drunk filter on my laptop, because Etsy is the perfect thing to get when you come back from the pub a little bit wankered. You turn it on, you go, yeah, that looks great. I'm going to have some of that, you know. And then a package appears at your door, and you're just like, what was I thinking?
What did
you
I? Know?
How do I have jackets for mice?
They do have. Some of the stuff is a little weird.
My
okay.
cat's going to love that.
Yeah. You know? How about a Stormtrooper wooden phone case? Now, that looks good.
Cool. I thought it was a panel.
Somebody spends a lot of time with a Dremel. Just
pretty awesome.
On one level, it's a great example of human creativity. On the other hand,
it's like, why?
It's deeply, deeply sad.
Yeah, here's the Mooney and Wormtail of Padfoot and Prong's Marauders map.
You see, if I saw somebody with that using that in public, I would run and not look back. That's definitely it rubs a lotion on its skin type territory.
Why is that serious?
I don't know what that means any more than I did dog's bollocks, but I like it.
Scroll up. Was that a glitter, a hippopotamus? What was that?
Oh, lady's earrings made of lady hippo earrings.
Those are wow. How much is that? I need those.
Wow.
Not for myself.
You're not pulling if you're wearing those.
It was sold, by the way. They're made in Bulgaria, as you might expect.
I'm getting Apple to write my Tinder profile. I'm going to start pulling ladies. By next year, I will be 42% slimmer. Only one dongle.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, boy.
No. This is an interesting story. HBO apparently is about ready to get going with its new HBO Now. Of course, you've seen HBO Go, which is an app that runs on many devices, Roku and Android and so forth. HBO Now will not. HBO Go requires a cable subscription. HBO Now will not.
You do wonder if people like Comcast are going to block it, though.
Oh, Comcast is going to hate this.
Yeah.
And this is where, well, this will be a good test of net neutrality, because they would love to block it, wouldn't they?
And they're still bound by the terms of their last takeover, but we'll see. I'm sure there's ways and means around that, and they've proven very good at finding sneaky ways around it.
They hate this idea. It's going to launch in April, which is perfect timing, because guess what else launches in April? Game of Thrones Season 5. Now, this is a question. $15 a month. Worth it? That's a...
I think that's high.
That's about what you pay, isn't it? For
no, that's what I pay for Hulu and Netflix combined. That's
that's true.
But I pay $7.99 and $7.99, so I'm going to pay $15.
What do you pay your cable company though for HBO?
Right now, I don't pay my cable company anything. I've got a friend that hooks me up, so I'm on.
You're really sure you want to admit this on air, mate?
Oh, hey, what are they going to do to me? What are they
you
wait
until the RIA police kick down your door and then it's just...
According to...
Leo can't even find me.
I don't know where he is. He's a mail drop somewhere in Philadelphia. It's $13 to $18 a month for most cable companies. That's why. It's $15 would make a lot of sense.
And they don't want to cut the market, I guess.
But the real risk is, and this is why it's taken so long for this to happen. This is what they call over the top, right? It's on internet, not directly from the cable company. But most of the revenue for most cable channels comes from cable. And when you do something like this, you really risk irritating your most important partner, which is the cable companies. If HBO goes over the top, it's just the beginning, I think. A lot of people are going to watch, see how this works. If it does well for HBO, I think they tried this in Scandinavia already. If it goes well, I think you could expect to see more of this. Sling TV started it, right, with ESPN and CNN. It's $20 a month. You get ESPN, CNN, some Disney channels.
Comcast is really not going to like it. Compare the Comcast versus the Fios app, for instance, Comcast has dedicated a lot of time and effort to where I don't even have to go to the HBO app anymore because everything is contained in their system. As far as Fios, they're not that well integrated, so I still have to go and use HBO Go for a lot of things. But Comcast is really dedicated to giving you a great enclosed mobile experience. So I'm sure they're going to be highly upset with this move.
On the other hand, I think the cable companies have known this is coming, right? This is not a surprise to them.
Well, you'd think, but they've been... Whereas most people were building windmills to deal with hurricanes coming, they're trying to build windbreaks, and that just doesn't work in the long term.
Right. Well, that's an apt phrase.
Chairman Mao, I'm afraid. But,
that's a well-turned phrase. But build a windmill, not a windbreak.
But exactly. But, I mean, they've done this time to go. I mean, HBO is looking at its most popular program, Game of Thrones, is the most pirated thing on the web. And they're saying, oh, we want some money from that. Right. So let's try this out and see if it works.
Two of the more forward-thinking cable companies, well, Cablevision is. I don't know about Cox, but Cablevision and Cox have both said, you know what, what we'll do is we'll bundle this with our broadband package. We'll get. I think what's going to happen is they're going to get the money one way or the other. They're going to recognize that people want to, okay, you want to cut the cord, no problem. It'll cost you exactly the same as it costs now for your cable bill. And now how do you feel? Because
I think it's also a question of the cable model and that how many things they're not going to be able to bundle in all the useless
channels
that's
what people
that you didn't want. I mean, why on earth would I pay for Joe Bob's Fishing Safari if it's just, if
that's
I just want
show.
HBO?
You don't like that? That's a great show.
Oh, come on. Watching people fish, you know, it's just like, it makes paint drying look interesting. You know?
And they have a weird way of setting things up. Like, so I called Fios and I said, all right, I don't want TV anymore. I don't use it. I don't need it. And he's like, well, if you keep television and just lower it down to the lowest grade, we can drop it down to $75. And if you send us back your box, we could drop it down to $54. Right. So I said, okay. So they cut me down and I've still been using this box. And I get so many channels with it. And I'm like, well, why was I paying $150 every month? And I feel like I still have 90% of the channels that I had before I told you I was going to cut it off. It's so weird how they market that. I'm like, so I'm going to pay $54 to still have TV and my internet, when if I just had my internet, you want to charge me $85? I'll just keep this TV then, I guess, for the reason of that. Like, the price differences and the price points are so odd. It's like they just charge whatever they want to charge. Yeah. And even when you drop stuff, it doesn't matter.
Crunchy, who's listening and chatting, he says he's in Sweden. It costs $10 a month. So that they're doing a kind of a trial
seeing how much they can take American consumers for.
Right. Well, if the Swedes will pay 10, Americans will pay 20.
Well, yeah, plus the Swedes have got a decent broadband network, whereas most people here are on dribble networks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Hey, we've talked before, and I was actually hoping John C. would be here, but he'll be here next week. John C. Dvorak will join us next week. But I'm curious what you guys think about net neutrality, the FCC vote. We talked about it last week. Of course, it happened a couple of weeks ago. But what's interesting to me is that it's even in our chat room, a lot of people who I thought would nominally be for net neutrality are upset about this and say, oh, watch out. You're going to have to pay license fees to podcast any minute now. Are you worried about that?
There's an awful lot of FUD going on around this. I mean, we haven't even seen the FCC document yet.
That's true. The rules are not out.
The rules aren't out. And everyone's like, I've seen some figures, $15 billion in extra taxes. People are just talking out their backsides on this. Until we see the document, we don't honestly know. Right. And then the lawsuits will fly, and it's going to get ground down into something which is just about acceptable to all parties. But, I mean, we've got the same problems in Europe with net neutrality now as well. So it's going to be years before this is sorted out.
That's the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no reason to be upset about it. People try to ask me, but I'm like, it doesn't matter. I don't know anything because you don't know anything.
Right.
You could tell me it's going to be lighter and thinner. It's the same thing like waiting for an Apple announcement. You have no clue. So just make up whatever you want that makes you feel better at night and wait and see. That's what we have to do.
I'm excited about Google's, and I don't think Google's confirmed this, rumors that Google will become a wireless carrier by bundling, I think this is fascinating, T-Mobile and Sprint connectivity with Wi-Fi.
They've signed deals for it already,
Your Nexus 6 will, according to the Wall Street Journal, choose whichever's best. And you'll pay less because of it.
It makes sense. I mean, the technology is there to do this. You just got a whole bunch of entrenched networks like Verizon and AT&T who don't want to play ball. And Google is desperate to get out there and break this ISP stranglehold.
It's going to piss Nexus 5 owners off because apparently it does not work with the Nexus 5.
Yeah, that was. I hope the Wall Street Journal's wrong on that because I like my Nexus 5 and I'm not wild about the Nexus 6. I know you guys have broken yours already, so you know.
It's software anyway. I'm sure somebody will find a way to retrofit it.
Well, I noticed the Republic Wireless has figured out how to do a very elegant handoff between Wi-Fi and I think they're on the Sprint network. I used one of their Motorola-based phones, and it did. I mean, I was on the phone in the house making a phone call on Wi-Fi, got in the car, drove off, and all of a sudden the handoff to 3G or 4G or whatever, and it worked. It worked really seamlessly. There was no bump or anything. So I think the technology, I think that does exist. But this, according to rumors, could happen any day now in the next couple of weeks.
I'm excited about it.
Monday, Sundar Pichai did confirm plans for a wireless service, but no further details coming out.
I was actually at that keynote.
Were you?
Yeah. He confirmed a lot of things, which was really interesting.
It was very forthcoming conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's getting out there an awful lot more, and I know that I heard from someone at Microsoft, they've got him with voice trainers at the moment, because when he gets excited, his Indian accent really gets pronounced.
Oh, I thought he was going to... His voice goes up an octave. No.
No. But I mean, he's...
You can't understand him.
I mean, after Steve Ballmer, this guy is a breath of fresh air.
Oh, I love Sundar Pichai.
You know, Ballmer was just a road accident. Yeah. And
You're thinking of Satya Nadella.
Oh, this is not Satya Nadella. Oh, this is Sundar Pichai.
This is Sundar Pichai.
I'm sorry. You know, all those Indians really look alike, don't they?
Now please,
we're
God,
really
don't
in
say
deep
that.
Trouble.
No.
We're in such deep trouble, Ian. Ian Thompson, Ian. Ladies and gentlemen. No, easy mistake.
I shall be flogging myself later just to make up for it. You know.
Hey, good news, though. One of the moves Sundar Pichai made is to move Bradley Horowitz back to running Google Plus, which is great news. I'm the only guy, me and Jeff Jarvis, and Mike Elgin. But we love Google Plus.
I love Google Plus too. There's four of us.
And there's five. Oh, yeah. Six. We got six of us. Let's start a social network.
Yay.
Yeah.
Google Plus. It's very quaint.
It's not quaint. It's wonderful and I love it. And you know what I love? It's interesting because Bradley said, my new title is in charge of photos and streams. Even though apparently it is Google Plus, and photos are a big part of what Google Plus makes Google Plus so great, I think.
Indeed.
All right.
Yeah. Dangerous as well, though. When people first get Apple phones and start uploading there involuntarily, you do wonder what gets put up. But Android phones, yes.
I've been very quick to make sure that I delete all the butt pictures.
It's the kind of thing that it's kind of like backups. You make the mistake once and you never make
never
it again.
Again. For a while, I was getting my son's texts and photos. In
That's
college.
Not something you want.
Well, gave me a vicarious thrill. All right. On that note, wait a minute. One more story. Forbes, inside the post-Minecraft life of billionaire gamer god Marcus Persson Notch, the guy who created Minecraft and sold it to Microsoft for, I think, $3 billion, of which he got the lion's share, because apparently he just really kept almost all of the company. He's done with game design. And he's just going to live the life of a billionaire.
It's quite the story. Move. Did you read it?
No. What does it say?
Oh, it's painful reading. It really is.
It's hard. It's hard to go on about it here. Like,
he bought a 23,000. He outbid Beyonce and Jay-Z for his 23,000 square foot mansion in Beverly Hills, $70 million. It has a candy room. Every house should have a candy room. And
exactly,
I bet he's
right.
Got a 15 by 15 empty room he could dedicate to the Vive.
He'll be broke in 5 years the way he sounds. He sounds like somebody just hit the lottery. How like 90% of those people go broke in a couple of years.
He grew up in the Arctic Circle, and now he's worth $2 billion. I think he should do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about his office, which has got a full-service bar and a DJ room where he can practice his spinning. And
his toilets are made of solid gold.
it sounds like a guy who was just... I mean, he got this massive payout, got married, got divorced a year later. He sounds like he's just flailing around trying to find something to do with his life. And with that kind of money, there are plenty of people who will find you things to do in your life.
But,
It reads like a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Because I really love Notch, and I think Minecraft is really an amazing.
It's the Lego
invention. Yeah, it's like Lego.
Yeah.
I just let my daughter start doing Minecraft about 2 months ago, and all of her friends are just so consumed with it. I kept it away from her as much as possible. I waited till like the sixth time she asked me about it before I let her get it. And again, today, it was like, she's like, what do you want to do? She's like, can we watch movies and play Minecraft? And I'm like, okay. So for four hours today, that's what we did. We watched Once Upon a Time and Minecraft. And I was like,
you're a good father.
Oh my God.
You're a good father.
I only do it like once a month. I told her, like, I can't get down. We got other things to do.
Like life.
But it's, so kids, apparently, kids are so into it.
Apparently, a person gets a lot of nasty tweets. Who doesn't? But he responds, or lately he's been responding with a animated GIF from the movie Zombieland of Woody Harrelson wiping tears away with a wad of money. That's good.
Well, if you're going to tease the trolls, it's a way to do it. You know,
he says, I'm aware it's a little douchey. As for girls, he says, I tried to use Tinder. It didn't work. In Sweden, it's horrible. There are only like four people.
Well, he's a Scandinavian as well, because you can always tell an extrovert Scandinavian
yeah.
in that they look at your shoes when they're talking to you rather than their own. But no, it's got to be tricky when you've got that much money out there and you've got nothing to do having sold off your big invention. Do you either plow all that into trying to find the next one or, oh, yeah, that's good.
That's a good animated GIF. I would post that.
I don't want to do anything. I'd do just what he's doing. I'd live the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Spend it all. Make sure I don't leave any for my kids like Uncle Leo.
I'd have a candy room. You know what, Marcus? If you're looking for something to do, I got a little podcast network. You could do a little show. You could DJ if you want. Whatever you want. Just come on up.
Hell with a candy room. I want a scotch room. Just like
scotch room. Hey, we're out of time. This is so much fun. Ian, you're always great. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your coming up.
Always
Ian,
fun.
Ian Thompson, theregister.co.uk. And he's at Ian Thompson on Twitter. But if you can figure out the spelling, you're a better man than I am.
I blame the parents.
I-A-I-N. That's the real spelling.
Scott spelling, yes. My father is half Scott. And
oh, neat.
Wanted to pass it on to me along with his kilt. So.
You're wearing plaid.
Well, yes.
Is that the family plaid?
No. This is, Lord knows where this came from. But I did wear a kilt to my wedding. So.
Did you? That's nice. I always wanted a kilt and the sporran and the whole thing. I think a dress kilt would be so great.
I'll tell you, it really looks good
on you, Leo.
It's better than a tuxedo.
Oh, infinitely.
And it looks good on portly men because, I don't know why, because we have lovely calves, I think. And you want to show them off. Doctor, always great.
Superb. Yeah,
you know. Hate is gonna hate. Don't hate the player,
feel
hate the game.
Feel free to tweet at me.
Yeah.
I'm on the Twitters. I got the internet. These shoes aren't cheap, Leo. I got like 47 pairs of them. They weren't cheap.
OwenJJStone.com, ladies and gentlemen. Doctor on the Twitter. Nice to see you, JJ.
Thanks for having me, Ankle.
And thank you, Miriam Joar, who got basically no sleep in the last 24 hours, just back for an hour from Barcelona, joining us on the air to give us your report from Mobile World Congress. And now you're going to head down to South By.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure to be here. And no, I did get some sleep on the plane. It's not that good. Bad, but I will have a good night of sleep tonight. Don't worry.
Good.
Yeah, off to South By, so I'll probably catch up with you about that when I get back.
If you want to do any crowd surfing, I can give you some tips.
I will. I will think about that.
It's an experience everyone should have at once. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon. Notice we have changed to daylight savings time in the United States, so our time is a little different if you haven't yet gone to summertime. We are normally, and now from now on, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and that is 2200 UTC. 2200 UTC. You'll have to do the math to figure out what that is in your area. You don't have to watch live, but we love it if you do. We love the feedback in the chat room if you get into our irc.twit.tv chat room. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv and wherever you get your shows or get one of our great apps. You know, our community is what makes Twit happen. It's pretty remarkable. And we didn't do any of the apps, just people who our fans, and we thank you all. Same thing with the chat room. It's really a community. We provide the server, and the community runs it, and that's just great. We were very grateful to you. If you want to be in the audience live, always nice to have a live audience. Just to email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a nice comfy chair out for you, or not. No, he's going, no. Didn't get the comfy chair, eh?
Do the chairs come with radios?
No. Oh. We are, as I said, this was episode 500, which is a wonderful milestone, but an even bigger one coming next month, April 19th. We are going to celebrate the 10th anniversary of this network. I can't believe we're 10 years old. And we're doing a lot of things on that episode. We're going to bring back all of the original cast members from the first few weeks of Twit, including John C. Dvorak, Kevin Rose, David Prager, Patrick Norton. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're also hoping to get some greetings from some of my favorite people, like, I don't know, Mike Arrington, Jason Calacanis, people like that.
We're putting the word out. We'll see who responds.
Jason, I do want one from you. But we're also asking you if you've got any great moments that you remember. It doesn't have to be from this year now. This is from any year in the last 10 years. We've got a little page for you, twit.tv/bestof10. Best of 10. And whatever you can remember, that would be useful. I guess we'll do little clips. We'll do a clip thing.
I pulled a lot of great moments already. I would rather have more than less. You know, too much than too little.
So. Kind of hard to believe it's been 10 years. Thank you, Jason Howell, our producer. Yeah. Not many podcasts survive 10 years.
Virtually none.
500. It's a great number.
Yeah. It's a magic number. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit. I'm going to say this for the 500th time, is in the can. Take care.